And this morning, our guest pastor is Pastor Jeff Stading from New Home Baptist Church. Pastor?
Let's pray. Father, as we gather this morning, we lift up and give thanks for this wonderful county that we live in, Lord. Father, for the abundance that you have given us of the forest and trees, Lord, for the abundant wildlife and fishing, Lord. Father, we thank you. Father, we thank you for our homes. And Lord, we lift up this commission that it meets today, Lord, to accomplish the governance and business of the county. Father, we pray for you to grant them your grace and wisdom, Lord, that as they take on these many subjects that they will be dealing with, that they would work your will to be done. Father, that your county would have peace and prosperity. Lord, that our community would be united together, and that we would glorify you in the way that we act. Father, we pray for our neighborhoods, Lord, that you might work within them. Father, that you would solve the problems that we have. Lord, we love you because you first loved us. And it is in the name of Jesus that we pray. Amen.
Amen.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I'd like to thank you, Pastor Stading. As I stated before, we appreciate you volunteer pastors coming, and please come back again. I'd like to welcome everyone here this morning. I hope all the fathers had a great Father's Day this past weekend. And I'd like to announce too that our next meeting is Our next meeting is a workshop, and it's Tuesday, June the 25th at 6 p.m. Then our next regular meeting is June the 8th. At 6 p.m. And then also, just for your information, we have budget workshops coming up. And we have one Tuesday, July the 16th, Thursday, July the 18th, Monday, July the 22nd, Thursday, July the 25th, and they all begin at 9 a.m. Approval of the agenda. I've been asked to remove item number 9 from the consent agenda. Are there any other items to be deleted, added, changed, or anything else? If not, is there a motion to approve the agenda?
Motion to approve.
Second.
I have a motion by Commissioner Moody, second by Commissioner Dent. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Workshops again. When is it?
The workshops?
Budget workshops?
Yes.
Okay.
Tuesday, July the 16th.
7:16.
And Thursday, July the 18th.
At 7. 18.
July the 18th.
Okay. All right.
Monday, July the 22nd. 7:22.
Okay.
And Thursday, July the 25th.
Okay.
7:25. And they all begin at 9 a.m.
Okay.
Moving on to bids and public hearings, number 4. The board to receive RFPs for construction, engineering, and inspection services for the competitiveness and employment by rail CEBYR project grant set for this date at 9 a.m. or as soon thereafter as possible.
I gave you a list. We only got one proposal, and it was from Winesman Consulting. We got some bids for it.
And the bid committee
would be Melody Cox, myself, and Jane Gucci.
Okay. The one thing that when I was reading over the packet, under the statement of issue in the board packet, it states recommendation of award or recommendation of setting a time for presentations from purposes to be made to the board at the July the 1st meeting. And it should be July the 8th. It just might have been a typo.
Coffee's not a dollar amount. Did y'all ask for a dollar amount? The one to this Johnson.
Apparently would not ask for an engineering service.
Negotiate it, don't you? Negotiate it. Once you've only got one proposal, but you still need to negotiate, and then y'all come back with recommendations to the negotiations.
Did y'all ask for so many copies of this one? I'll pick up two envelopes and here, do I need to open both of them? Yes, we asked for seven.
Now, they might have a slice in there. They might have one in there.
It is one original and two copies, and there's five copies in the other one, so you got six.
While she's doing that, if I may, on your consent items number 10, there is a resolution in number 10 that you might want to look at and pass.
It's an authorizing resolution for the chairman to sign on behalf of the board for a supplemental agreement for the Green Street cycle.
For the Green Street.
Green Street project.
So what do I need to do?
Well, what you can do is you can just ask to remove it from the consent items and then just ask for me to read it.
I'm not reading.
And then you can pass it.
They have presented a proposal for a fixed fee contract, and that amount is $120,000.
I figured they might do that.
Okay, so the bid committee will take it and come back at the next meeting with a recommendation. Number five, the board to hold the first of two public hearings set for this day at 9:05 a.m. by a soon thereafter sponsor to receive public input and notify the public of a possible grant application to the Florida Department of Parks and Recreation, Florida Recreation Development Assistance Program for the 2020-2021 funding cycle, requesting funding assistance for additional improvements to the Taylor County Sports Complex. Welcome back.
I am happy to be here.
We're happy to see you too.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here. I get awful homesick sometimes, and this morning is my home. Just to give you a brief update, the FERDAP funding cycle will be opening here in a couple months to submit the grant. We have been ineligible the last year to apply because the maximum allowable grants you can have is three. And we have three of those. We have Sports Complex, Steenhatchee Community Center Park, and Hodges Park at Grace. And all of those are closed down, so this year we're eligible to apply for two. And they have two pots of money that you can apply for. One's a maximum project of $200,000, and the other one's $50,000 and under. And you can apply for either one of those pots. You can do $200,000 or $100,000 and $150,000, however you choose to do it. I recommend, and we can do $200,000 if you want, but there are many years the legislature only funds the $50,000 grant. So during your planning process, keep that in mind. This project has been isolated because you have identified it tentatively in your capital improvement plan, and the staff involved with the sports complex has submitted the budget for improvements that they needed out there. So we went ahead and scheduled a public hearing for this to see if you would like to move forward. Just because you're having a public hearing does not mean this has to be one of your projects. The application process is fairly lengthy. And if you want to submit two, we need to be identifying projects that you would like to move forward with. And we're going to discuss general later in the agenda, but we knew the sports complex had been identified. A project that you submit for FERDAP has to be included in your capital improvement plan. So keep that in mind when you adopt it, that these projects have to be in there. On the projects, we can request a waiver of match since we're a ready community, so we do not have to provide a match. But just keep in mind, if you go over your budget, they're not going to pay for that.
Mm-hmm.
I will let the sports complex people come up and identify what it is. But that's why that project has been identified. Each application requires two public hearings in addition to a public workshop, or if, let's say you have the tea crowd, that can count as one of your meetings for the sports complex. So it is a bit lengthy. It's a very competitive grant process, and one point can make a difference. I believe it's in your general discussion part of how you get points on this grant, and we always try to make sure for your project elements we get the maximum points, because there's a lot of areas that we lose points that are beyond our control. We usually do not have a organization that's a partner to fund part of it, so we lose points there. Our projects are not already connected to a statewide trail. We lose points on that because you can official. So there's a lot of areas that's beyond our control, so we always try to get the maximum number of points that we do have control over. So I will turn it over to Gary, and thank you.
Thank you.
That's fine. Some of the areas we've looked at in the past and everything on this grant, some of our infrastructure we need to upgrade, stuff like that, but also we looked at some new softball fields and canopy figure on it, and they're quite pricey. They were like $400,000
per field.
We set up for two of them, but that's kind of way out there. We also looked at batting cages. I think we're doing one this year, and we probably need six total. So that might be an area to look at. Resurfacing the walking trail could be one of them.
Additional lighting of the walking trail.
Right, solar
and that light. Would be more for security necessarily than to encourage people to walk it in the evening.
In the fall, it gets dark real early, and that's one of the areas they come to me about, said the lighting on the track we need to look at.
Do our parks, are they open from dusk to dawn?
They're open from 7 to 10.
This includes Hodges Park too?
I don't know about it. Just
so there's different times for different parks?
I guess.
We'll have to look at that. I know that the gates are shut by, you know, later on during the evening. I don't know how late the games go.
They will run. We've been there till 9:30 sometimes.
Okay, we can discuss that later. But I was thinking that all parks should be dusk to dawn. But I know on game nights you have to keep them open. But I'd like to discuss that in another meeting and have all the parks being the same.
And there's some other areas, like we've got three bridges, not over the river, but over the, like, the ditches and stuff like that. They need to be rebuilt. So there's a lot of areas, and I'm going to sit down with Melody and go over the point system and see what areas we can address and what we, in the past we've done exercise equipment, mulch, plants, and stuff like that. So there's a lot of areas maybe we can utilize this money.
Well, and so you know, the budget that I prepared to be within the $200,000 range includes playground chain covering, which
yes,
is $50,000.
Is it, you think it's 50?
Yes.
Per playground, or both of them combined?
One.
Okay.
And Gary, if I can interject for a moment, I know in discussions with Greg yesterday, Greg Mullins, our recreation coordinator, he did state that one of the assignments he was given
was to determine whether or not we could draw in tournaments. And he told me yesterday that every time he has a discussion with a travel ball team, one of their first questions is, how many batting cages do you have? And he felt like that was an important element if we are going to attempt to have more tournaments at the sports complex.
Right, and you know, when you and I talked last week about that, for me, as one commissioner, I'm very interested in what does it take out there for him to bring in tournaments, because that's been something that for almost 10 years that, you know, I've brought up multiple times, and we have probably the most beautiful sports complex that I know of, and it's very important that we have tournaments scheduled for many reasons, the economy here and entertainment and so forth. So for me, I'm more interested in what does it take to get us ready for tournaments. The lighting and the resurfacing, if we change the parks from dusk to dawn, that won't be an issue. But for me, I'd be very interested in the batting cages, because that obviously is one that has been identified as having tournaments. And then, of course, I'm always concerned about the playground equipment being too hot and children being burned and not being able to use it. So for me, those are the only two that I would be interested in right now. We've got other projects that we're going to identify later, probably not today, but soon. And so I'd like to see some of the grant money put to some other projects, possibly. But, I mean, we can hear from, well, first of all, I want to hear, this is a public hearing, so when you're done.
I'm done.
Okay, so it is a public hearing, so anyone from the public that would like to come forward and speak on this issue, you may come forward now. Okay? If not, then we'll close the public hearing.
If you want to have permission to speak, I have something to say.
I'm doing that now. Now for the commissioners.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, I tell you what I've been hit with, an aquatic center. I heard her talking about the hot playground equipment. I noticed there are several communities I visited. Ocala is one, three in Tallahassee. They were saying they have aquatic centers. And aquatic centers is for the people within the city limits or county, either one, for different things, for exercise, for children learning how to swim, and this kind of stuff. I was hit with it. I told them I'd bring it to the county commission, and when we have a budget workshop, I want to bring it back and let it be a forefront. Fact about it, the little girl that brought it to me is about 12 years old, and I think you need to hear that. She even mentioned maybe the city and the county going together and trying to get a grant to do it together. So I will be bringing it back to the commission.
Anything to entice monies into the county. Okay, if we can set up strategic, what do they call them, tournaments, professional tournaments, and bring these in, this is going to supplement our hotels, our tax base. It's a good thing. So I think we need to concentrate on those efforts before we go into beautification projects.
And that's exactly where I am, you know, in terms of the sports complex, which is what we're talking about. I think that I agree with that, whatever it takes for tournaments. Commissioner Moody?
I'm buying the report about improvement for the tournaments. That's the main thing I'm interested in getting that done first. And then if left, there's something bad wrong with the resurfacing of the walking trail, and people that kind of be on the back burner.
Yeah,
right. You know, and the bridges, they can be repaired if the board goes bad in one of them for right now, you know, but I'd love to see the time for first.
Right. I think we all agree on that. And so there will be another public hearing on this same subject, and we'll discuss it again at that time. Okay.
what we had prepared in a tentative budget to get the maximum points was, the focus was on the playground shade covering, which is a good cut of the grant, $50,000. And the batting cages, we thought if we could do one quad of four, so that you had that completed out for tournaments, that came in at $104,000. So the main part, that was the big chunk of your grant application, and what I prepared, and it doesn't mean you have to do it. To get the points that you need then for that category, we added in like partial trail resurfacing and security lighting and a couple pieces of outdoor fitness equipment, because that got you the maximum number of points that you did, but it gave you all the money that you needed to accomplish, to get the bulk of the money that you needed.
So what you're talking about, Ben, has to be done exclusively at the sports complex to get these points?
Yes, to get these points.
So this $200,000 or $250,000 has to be spent at the sports complex, no other option.
And that's the way it is with all the grants. It has to be spent at, you pick a site specific. And that's why your public hearing today said sports complex, because your grant, your public hearings and your public workshops have to identify the project where all that money will be used.
Well, so that's just the conversation.
We couldn't identify, just thinking outside the box, we couldn't have identified another. Somebody put this on the agenda about the sports complex. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was a commissioner. So somebody decided that they wanted to do the sports complex. Is that you?
It was in general staff discussion. It was like not me in particular, but once it was identified by the board in the capital improvement plan, it was relayed to me that we will apply for this grant. Possibly.
There were several needs identified during the strategic planning session, that there was a long list of needs presented for the sports complex. So our goal was to identify a funding source for those needs that were identified during the strategic planning session, not to get ahead of a commissioner or try to step out on our own. And I apologize if it appears that way. That was not the intention. My understanding of the needs that were identified were for shade covers and for to identify a way to promote our sports complex. But I think what Melody is trying to say is that for an application to be successful, you have to maximize your points. And our request is, if the board wishes for us to move forward with an application for the sports complex, which is completely your decision, I think we need an idea of how large of a project we need to submit a grant application for. We have two different for that grant applications. The maximum for each is $200,000. But we have had success with smaller projects, and typically the legislature will fund a project that is $50,000. So the direction that we're asking for is, do we need to submit two different projects for $200,000, or do we need to submit one for $200,000 and one for $50,000? And the budget that Melody came up with was just if the board wishes to submit an application for a large project. Now, you could choose for us just to submit an application for shade covers, and that be a $50,000 project. I don't know if that helps clarify what staff's intent was just to find funding for needs that were identified earlier.
Yeah, well, I think we all agree about the batting cages and the covers, you know, but as we get on into the agenda, there will be other things that we may discuss at some point in time, and maybe not today. We need to have a list of things that each commissioner, I'm sure, has a list of projects that they would like to see done.
Yes.
And so I just didn't know if it seems like that we're trying to fit everything into the maximum amount of a grant possible. And it obviously has to be in one location. So you choose that one location,
and then you try to maximize that.
Correct. So any other projects that any of us have would have to have other sources of funding, right? Other than this, unless we change this to another project. Am I correct?
Right.
I just want to make sure I understand any projects you want.
It's just site specific.
Like, I understand that.
Yeah, site specific, and the money can only be used at that site.
Okay.
And we historically will add, like, if you only do your playground and your baseball fields, you get 11 points. But if you throw in, we're going to plant 3 native trees, you get another 6 points, and you can do that for $500 to get your $150,000. So we go through our list of priority points on what we need to do at a minimal price to get you your big money.
Right, and I thank you for helping me understand that better.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a public hearing. We have another one, mm-hmm. and we have other things on the agenda pertaining to.
Yes, right. Yes. So we are under the understanding you want to move forward with a second public hearing for a possible FERDAP grant for the sports complex, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
And it doesn't pass anything.
It does not. Just because you've held your public hearings, it doesn't count for anything until you submit an actual grant application.
Good.
This is just part of the formal process required to bargain some change. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, consent items.
Let me, Jacob. I appreciate you going through the effort to try to get us to understand that process, okay? Mm-hmm. Nothing better than good understanding.
Once you understand, then you
can. The FERDAP, it is a wonderful program for a lot of communities like us.
Yeah.
It's the only way we can fund these projects. And you know, we have so much because of FERDAP, but it is a confusing and time-consuming process.
Okay.
But the great part is, once you do the process, we can get the money with no match from us.
Good deal. Sure.
We got it straight now. consent items are 6 through 11, but we are going to remove item number 10, so it'll be 6, 7, 8, 9, and 11. Is there a motion to your position? Oh yeah, we're right, it's number 9. Okay. All except number 9 and then number 10.
You gonna take those two out?
Yes, because at number 10 we have to read the resolution.
Yeah, that's fine. Okay.
Our attorney said.
Well, I move if that's what you need.
Okay.
6, 7, 8, right.
6, 7, 8, and 11.
Yes. Okay.
Okay. There's a motion. Is there a second?
I second.
Okay. Got a motion by Commissioner Dent, second by Commissioner Murphy. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign.
Yeah.
Motion carries. Item number 10, the board to consider approval of local agency program supplemental agreement number 1 to construct a sidewalk along Green Street and to consider adoption of a resolution authorizing the chairperson to accept such agreement on behalf of the commission as attended by Kenneth Dudley, county engineer. Is there a motion to read the resolution by title only?
I move to read.
And we have a motion by Commissioner Moody, second by Commissioner Gibbs. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Mr. Bishop.
Green Street Sidewalk Supplemental Agreement Number 1, signature authorization. That's the title.
Is there a motion to adopt the resolution?
Motion. Adopt.
Okay. We have a motion.
Second.
A motion by Commissioner Moody, second by Commissioner Dent. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Public request number 12. Hugh Thomas, one of the Water Management District, to appear to provide a brief overview of the district and presentation of payment in lieu of taxes. PILG checks.
Yes.
Good morning.
You did say check, didn't you?
Yes. So if anything else that comes out of this, like, you have your money. Madam Chair, members of the board, I'm Katie Kelly. I'm obviously not our executive director, Hugh Thomas. He is out of town this week at a conference and sends his regards, but was obviously unable to make it today. I wanted to give you a brief overview of what's going on in our district, some of our major initiatives and projects we're working on with the county, and then I'm going to turn it over to Amy Brown to cover the remainder of our presentation as it relates to water supply planning. So if that's okay, I'll probably ask this. Okay. The Swanee River Water Management District encompasses nearly 8,000 miles of North Central Florida. We have about all or part of 15 counties across that region, with 13 river basins and a population of nearly 340,000. Per Florida statute, we have been tasked or charged with four areas of responsibility: their water supply, water quality, flood protection, and natural systems restoration. Some major initiatives that the district is working on. I know this county in particular is probably fairly familiar with our river cost share program. It's regional initiatives valuing environmental resources program that we have. We also have several agricultural cost share programs. We work with minimum poison levels. I believe in this area we have commenced rulemaking for the Steinhatchee MFL as it relates to the Steinhatchee River. And currently, I don't know where it is in the rulemaking process, but it is meeting its requirements for, I guess, what we're doing. We also support water quality initiatives. That includes working with the Department of Environmental Protection on septic to sewer projects. They are kind of the keeper of that, but we do help them if our counties need assistance and contacting them and whatnot. We also have a lot of advanced technology, ag technology projects. And Amy's going to follow up in a little bit about the Western Region Water Supply Planning. That's another major charge of our district currently. As I mentioned with the river projects, here is a list of them. As you can see at the top half, these projects are currently complete, and I do not believe that you guys have anything in-house with us currently. We do have one ongoing ag cost share program with one producer in this area, and as you can tell, it's going to, it's estimated to conserve about 0.005 million gallons per day of water. Here is our FEMA flood map data. This is kind of a generic slide, but the district does work with FEMA to do assessments for flood insurance. Obviously, Taylor County is majority in the Egan FEMA Steinhatchee Basin. The 2012 grant that we received with FEMA, I believe, is complete at 100%. And the 2019 grant that we just received is estimated to be complete by 2024. What we did do was include the coastal portion of the district in this assessment because it was just easier for us to include that while we were already continuing our efforts throughout the county. Here is a map of our groundwater conditions for May. Obviously, in the past couple of weeks, that's probably changed a little bit since I turned this presentation in. But we do get gather data from our aquifer wells around Taylor County, and that's how this slide is created. But I think when this was made, the groundwater levels have returned to a pretty normal range. I think earlier this year they might have been a little high, but currently, where it was when the slide was made, things were pretty normal. This last slide that I have is our river gauge slide. This depicts the river flow on the Steinhatchee River just north of State Road 19 bridge. At the end of May, the flows were very low, which was not surprising considering the low amount of rainfall that we experienced throughout the past few months. And over the weekend, at the beginning of June, it was June 8th and 9th, the river and its headwaters had over 10 inches of rain, which caused the water level to increase over 6 feet during that weekend in response.
So I'm sure that has also increased slightly since this map was made, but we are monitoring that for future flooding concerns. So with that, I turn it over to Amy.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, commissioners. So my name is Amy Brown, and I'm in the water supply planning section. Our charge in water supply planning is to make sure there's sufficient water to project your growth and sustain natural systems. And so that's what we're working with. Our most recent water supply planning effort, the water supply assessment, was accepted by our governing board in the summer last year in 2018. We were looking at the planning horizon from 2015 to 2035. And as a result of that planning, there were some recommendations that happened. The first one was that we recommended that we kind of split the district in terms of how we do planning. So we'll have the eastern planning region, which is kind of the light green that you see there. That's the part of the district where we need to plan jointly with St. John's River Water Management District, and we're already in a water supply planning process with them. And so then the rest of the district, the western portion, we would handle separately just so we wouldn't have to coordinate with St. John's across the Swan River divide there. Within the western planning region, there was a portion of the western planning region, which is the hatch area that you can see on the map there. That's portions of Madison, Taylor, Lafayette, Dixon, and Beebe counties. Those portions, it was a recommendation that we initiate regional planning, and that would be to make sure that there's sufficient water supplies to meet projected growth and sustain natural systems. The reason that that divide is drawn where it is, which is kind of, you know, cutting through some of the different county boundaries, is it's drawn basically along the potentiometric divide, the groundwater divide, between the water that flows towards the Suwannee River and the water that flows towards the coastal system. So at this point, we're focusing on making sure there's sufficient water in the Suwannee River Basin based on projected growth both in our district and up into Georgia. So this is water use for the district as a whole. It's about 253 million gallons per day of use that was estimated in 2015 for water supply. You can see that about 136 million gallons per day of that was agricultural water use. So when I move forward to the next slide, you see that the use in this county is very different, and the projections in terms of growth, in terms of water demand, are very different for this county. So if I slide forward, so you can see for water use in Taylor County, the big water use that we have is our industrial user here, and that is the GE Cellulose Foley plant. Their water use in terms of, like, a historical trend is actually declining because they've become more efficient in terms of water use. You can contrast that with most of our other counties that are looking at more of an agricultural demand and an agricultural growth. And so in those portions of the district, we're looking at about a 40% growth in projected agricultural irrigation that is driving an increase in water demand. So while the demands in Taylor County specifically are relatively flat, for the district as a whole, we're looking at water growth that's mainly due to the agricultural sector. And so on the right-hand side, you can see the irrigated acreage in Taylor County that's being estimated for us by the Florida Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services. So we're below 1,000 irrigated acres, and you can contrast that with other parts of our district where 20 to 30,000 acres. The agricultural irrigated acreage is less than 1% of the water use in Taylor County. Okay, so then in terms of just the message going forward, there will be a recommendation that will go to the July governing board for the Swan River Water Management District to designate a hatch area. You saw that crosshatch area in the map as a water resource caution area. What that means is that that's an area where, again, we're going to be prioritizing for projects. If there was a water treatment facility that's within those boundaries, they have to consider water, the reuse of their wastewater to make sure it's being used as beneficial as possible. That's not something that there are any municipalities in Taylor County that would be impacted by, but even were it to be here, there's already reuse happening because the reclaimed water is being sent to the Foley plant from the city of Perry. Then the spray field is also, because it's recharging the aquifer, is considered as reuse as well. But okay. I'm happy to answer any questions. I'm happy to sit down with anybody in more detail in terms of water use estimation for the county or how we're doing that. Going forward, we'll be talking to the county, reaching out again as we look at projections going forward.
Any questions from the
board? How do you take the amount of water going to be used in the future? I mean, what, how do you figure that scale going up like that?
Right, so for large industrial users, we'll actually reach out directly to them to see if they're looking at a flat growth or if they're looking to bring in new water demands. So So for large industrial users, we'd be reaching out to them individually. In terms of population, we're using the Bureau of Economic and Business Research at the University of Florida. It does population projections by county throughout the state of Florida. And we're looking at those projections in general to kind of get a guide of how many people they're saying are going to be coming into this area. Because some water use is per person, right? You have more people, you have more demands. Industrial is a little bit different. And then for agriculture, we're working with the Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services. They're looking at economics, they're looking at what types of crops are being grown, what types of demands going forward. And they're actually projecting where they think new agricultural growth will be occurring. So there's some modest growth projected for Taylor County, but in terms of scale, most of the type of things that are grown here are not irrigated acres. You know, agriculture is not irrigated.
Anybody else? Yes. Well, I have one. I see that here. Part the Capitol Hall Sewer Service Project. And I believe the other lady, what was her name? She's the one who brought that.
The sewer project,
I'm sorry, Forest Capitol Hall Sewer Project. I know a little bit.
I think it was on the first slide, but yeah. Kenneth, you want to address that?
Excuse me. Under that river costs, or in the river share program, we took the existing on-site sewer system tanks and systems, abandoned those, and connected up to the city sewer system.
I remember doing that.
Yes, sir.
But I'm just wondering what they had to do with it.
They funded it.
I remember it was in the budget, and we worked it.
River grant.
So, okay.
I got a lot to do with it.
You appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, and that's the same with all of those on that slide. We cost shared those with the county.
Great.
And we actually do have an application in with them. They responded to one RAI, and I was going to ask them, do you have an idea of when the funding determination is going to be decided for that program this year?
Like river as a whole?
The river cycle for this year?
Yeah, I don't know.
I know that I
am
involved in the committee. The review process is happening right now. I can get Pat Hoster to circle back in terms of the dates for when that will be done, but the review is ongoing right now.
Yeah, we like I said, we responded to one RAI after our initial submission. I was just curious of when we think the decision is going to be.
I can get to the date, but I don't know it for sure. I know the push is on to get those reviews done. Yes.
I'd like to say that we appreciate you all coming over when we call you, when we have issues, when you come over and you check on flooding areas for us. As you know, we have a lot of low-lying areas, and we still have flooding issues. I know in my district, off of Ellison Road to the east. But we appreciate when you do come and help us and everything else that you do for us. We appreciate it. The water table, would you say that it's normal or average, or would you say with all the rain, perhaps that it's a little above average? Or do we have that data yet?
Yeah, if we go back to that slide, I go backwards. So if you look at the groundwater conditions there, so you were in the normal categories in May.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I mean, and I don't have this map for since May, but 10 inches of rain does a lot to change where the water table is. And so certainly around the sea level, I would anticipate that substantially raised the aquifer levels in that area because of the 10 inches of rain that came in the vicinity of the sea level basin. I don't know across the board if that was. I know you guys got a lot of rain in early June, and so since the levels were already at the normal range, you've got that amount of rain that I would expect the levels are relatively high right now in this area.
I know when we were going through that very hot period and drought, I was really concerned about the water table. And then with all the rain, when certain people complained about it, listen, we need this rain. We need to. It's good for our aquifers. So, anyway, yes.
They in Swan River has gotten to where they're forwarding on a monthly basis these, not
yes.
Only this slide, but there's about a dozen other
right.
That address all those aspects and even show where that rainfall is falling within our county as well as regional. It's a
yes.
It's pretty good amount of information.
And I can resend that to anybody that's interested. We just released our June one. We present them on our governing board each month, so we do have that available if you haven't yet seen it. I have
it. I think it's been sent to us. Okay. I remember looking at that. So, okay. Yes, we get that. And thank you.
Sure.
Yes.
That is kind of the challenge of Florida, is that it's kind of a feast or famine sometimes with respect to the rainfall.
That's right. Anyone else?
Questions? Well, for the grand finale, you have your payment in lieu of taxes check for $15,646.97.
Well, thank you very
much. Absolutely. Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Did y'all want a picture for the press, or are you okay just with this, or it's up to you?
We'll just hand you the check.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so
thank
much.
You.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Constitutional officers, other governmental units, number 13, the clerk to discuss with the board advertising for bids on additional lands for achievement deeds and to re-advertise for parcels that did not sell at the last bid.
Okay, I think you got a list of the, we had 10 parcels in town, and those were in, so we had 12 land. Those have already been declared as surplus property, so I'm asking the board to re-advertise because I've had somebody in college wants one of those parcels. Also, we have added five more parcels through the achievement process. That's 15008 through 15044. Now, I'm asking the board, do you want to declare those parcels as surplus property and add them to the list so we can re-advertise everything at one time? Is what the board wants.
I would think that would be the way to do it. That's your recommendation.
That's my recommendation. The man that wants one of these parcels tried to pay me for what the value was, and I said, I can't do that. You have to re-advertise.
Okay.
Okay.
So you want to advertise all at once?
Yes.
All
at once.
Is there a motion?
Yeah.
Okay.
You got to declare those five, the last five on that list, as surplus.
Mm-hmm.
And then a motion and second to re-advertise.
Okay.
Okay. We need two motions then. Motion to declare surplus. Right. And
yeah, is there a motion to determine?
I move.
Make second.
Surplus. Okay, we got a motion by Commissioner Dix and a second by Commissioner Murphy. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Now, is there a motion to re-advertise the 12 and add the 5 for a total of 17?
I move.
Make second.
Sure.
Okay, we have a motion by Commissioner Dix, second by Commissioner Murphy. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Item 14, the clerk to discuss with the board tax deed applications on ship homes.
Yeah, we have a issue. We just sold one that had a ship home on it. And Conrad, I notified Conrad that we had that. We have two more pending. And what happens is there's outstanding mortgages on these parcels of land. So this makes a total of three ship housing that we have in the tax deed process. Now the last one we sold Monday was 2 weeks ago, I think it was. Was on the certificate was owned by an investment company. So they now have title to it, but I'm gonna let Conrad tell you what happens with a ship housing mortgage.
Wow.
Once it's sold. It obviates the mortgage. In other words, it clears the title to it, but it doesn't obviate the money being owed.
Yeah.
So if you are going to do the purchasing, you don't worry about the mortgage itself because it clears the title. But the person, now remember that these ship monies owed, it goes down as the years pass. So that has to be determined. So as a practical matter, it's going to be hard to ever collect the money. Are y'all following what I'm saying?
Yes. Okay.
So that was what my research revealed, and I talked to somebody else who does a lot of foreclosures.
Okay.
So,
Connie.
Yes, sir.
5 years the date?
Usually they're 5 years.
If it's a debt-by-name construction, it's 20 years.
Yeah.
Three houses.
for five.
Rehab for five, and the others for 20, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The people buy it, if they actually want to resell it, they have to go through the process to get that confirmed through the court process.
Well,
to be legal.
Well, what happens with that, say for instance, you purchased one, you know, and then you wanted to sell it to someone else and they wanted to get a mortgage with, say, the bank. The bank is going to require that the title be cleared, and that not only just because of the tax deed, they want more, and that would be a builder quiet title, which is a legal way to totally clear, because they want to make sure that they're first in line with regard to what money's owed on it.
Is there something in the statute that said there's a 7-year limitation on that? After 7 years, they probably wouldn't have to do that if they waited 7 years.
But the bank doesn't want to wait 7 years, right. You know.
So for right now, if someone wanted to purchase the home, then they would be the ones to have to take care of this tax deed?
That's what it sounds like.
Right.
Okay.
And I think the one we sold from the information that I got, and Jamie and Melanie might know something about that one. The man who actually owned the house and had the ship mortgage passed away. He had no family members except siblings. And for them to be able to do that, they have to probate his estate. That's never been done. Because the mortgage, the ship program, I think it's probably something $1,000. But there's somebody living in the house. Do you know who's living in the house? Or would you have to get it to see? Because we found out in our investigation with the taxi sale that somebody who's living in the house, we don't know if it's a family member or who. So when this man gets his tax deed, he's probably going to try to do an eviction for that person out. In the process. So we need to discuss some of those issues. And what Conrad's saying is the debt goes with the person. Mm-hmm. Right. That the mortgage, you can't give anything about the mortgage.
So of the three, one person passed away, mm-hmm. and then the other two?
See, I don't know about the other two. I got concerned because we had already had that tax deed sale when they come and talk to me, so that's when I got Conrad involved to see what. But the amount of the debt does survive with the person who's on the house. But the mortgage is gone because, see, when we get the tax deed application, the tax collector does a title search. And he certified to me all the surrounding landowners, plus anybody who has an interest, tax lien on it, mortgage, whatever, he certifies that to me, and everybody gets a certified notice. So when a mortgage company is holding the mortgage, they should redeem the tax certificate to preserve the mortgage if they choose to do so. But that's not happening. So.
You can see this is a legal quagmire.
Yes.
There's one other thing I wanted to go back to, number 10. Y'all need to also approve the supplemental agreement. Y'all approved the resolution, but we forgot to say that y'all need to approve the supplemental agreement in number 10 under the consent items. There's agreement there.
Right.
Okay. Is there a motion? I'm sorry.
It's my fault.
That's okay. I'll make a motion.
Okay. Okay, we have a motion by Commissioner Murphy and a second by Commissioner Dempsey. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
I think we're through with 10, hopefully.
Yes. Okay. County staff items number 15, the board to discuss the Taylor County Master Plan for Mobility, Recreation, and Connectivity funded through a Department of Economic Opportunity DEO Community Planning Technical Assistant Grant as agenda by the Grants Director. Well, that was a mouthful.
I passed this out to y'all today because when we did the agenda packages, I only have a draft. So I've provided you all a copy of this. Can I have that?
One right here. Yes, ma'am.
I've got to tell you, I am so proud of this because for the last 10 years when I had my own annual evaluation by the county administrator, a goal for me, I said every year, was to do a master plan for the county because I had did one back in like 2002, 2003, and it needed updated so bad that I never could get to it. We have been working away on this. This project was funded with a $30,000 grant from GEO, and part of it was the interest that FWC and Florida National Scenic Trails has in Taylor County as part of the connection to the Florida National Scenic Trail and the economic impact it could have on the county. Last night I was doing a little bit of research getting ready for the workshop tonight, and you know, regionally $3 billion in tourism money was spent on trails in Florida last year during a 12-month period. So it's a huge economic engine, and it's just something we really need to participate in. And FWC has really taken us under their wing on part of this and helped facilitate getting this grant. This is for the draft only, and we can apply for a second grant to have the actual, do the actual plan and have it become a part of our comprehensive plan, which will help substantially on grant dollars too. That's another grant we can apply for that can be 100% grant funded. And just so you know, this grant actually, Lane Cooper Consulting helped us prepare this. But $8,000 of the money from this grant went to fund Jamie and my salaries. So we actually worked on this for free for y'all with grant dollars. So that's a good thing too that we were able to do this. The good part of this plan is it identifies what we can do today and what we can do tomorrow, but there are no commitments from the board in this plan. And I told LaWanda, I was so proud of that because we worked really hard towards that so that we had a plan for you, but knowing everything that you have to do, that we weren't committing you to anything, that we just gave you goals and guidelines and what was sufficient to help get us grant points. And this comes into play not only from a planning standpoint from you and to help us become part of the Florida National Scenic Trail, but it can also help get additional grant points. Just for example, on the FERDAP grant we were talking about, if you have an adopted trail master plan, that's 7 points. And on FERDAP grant, a half a point can make a big difference on where you get that money. There's also another section on the FERDAP grant where if that project site is a connector, such as, say if you do apply for the FERDAP sports complex grant, those trails within the sports complex connect to that sidewalk that runs along 19, which was funded with the Transportation Alternatives grant. So that's considered a connector trail. And you get 8 points on that FERDAP grant because you have that sidewalk that connects when you have an adopted master plan. Mm-hmm. So it can help you not from FERDAP to your actual Austin Greenwoods and Trails grant on your Sun Trail program. You know, FDOT's approached you on applying for Sun Trail money. So this can really come into play down the road. We're holding a public workshop tonight on this. And this has been a very public process, which our first master plan meeting was held in here. Commissioner Moody and LaWanda both attended, and the room was full. There was no place else for people to go. It was a very good public participation process. We broke up into groups, and each group gave a presentation then on what they wanted to do. That meeting lasted about 3 hours. We had the city manager and the city council attended. We had a second meeting then down in Skeenhatchee. And we did the same thing down there to get public input on that and broke up into groups. We held a third meeting here which was a general meeting to update the planning process, and then we hold tonight. But it's been a very good public planning process from not only hiking, biking, and walking, but we had a good equestrian turnout, which was really good because you've had equestrians that part you over the years. We had a great turnout on that. We also had a lot of ATV people attend, and we weren't really prepared for that, but we were glad for that because we didn't realize that there was so much need for that in the community, and had a lot of good suggestions. So we were able to draw from the people on needs we really haven't taken into account. So it's been a very public, like I said, process, and it's been a good staff learning process because we were able to get ideas that really weren't on our radar as far as the needs.
Did you have a summary of the previous meetings? I would be interested to just see some of the ideas that were presented.
Oh, sure. That's been included in our deliverables. And I will get you copies of the deliverables because we had to submit deliverables to DEO through the process. And that included sign-in sheets. It included the people's sheets on where they did their own draft. I'll get you copies of that because it was really neat. It was really neat. The people broke up into groups kind of on their own throughout the first meeting. And it was really interesting because a lot of them were meeting each other for the first time, or they just kind of knew each other, and they had such individual needs. It was a lot of fun. I normally, like, public workshops to me are just a thing I have to do, you know, to get you grant points. Where in this case, it was fun. Glenville Herber Consulting, they specialize in networking type meetings. They helped draft the master plan for the Waterfronts Florida program down in Steamhatchee, and they're very good from the standpoint of getting individual groups to interact with each other. I actually found out about them at a Waterfronts meeting because they were very involved in the when FWC had the net ban and the fishermen were arguing with each other. They were one of the mediators in that. So I knew that they were really good at that, but they helped merge these groups at the meetings. But I will give you copies of that because it was really interesting to get the ideas. It was a good meeting, wasn't it? The big public workshop we had here to hear all of the ideas.
But so it was a pretty diverse
meeting. It was a very diverse group. And like I said, the ATV thing wasn't on staff radar. We were more interested because of FWC and the Florida National Scenic Trail and that coalition for that. Also in this process, we are applying for Steamhatchee. One of the things deliverables was for Steamhatchee to be a designated trail town, which is no commitment from the board. You don't have to do anything except submit this application, and you are included then in all, like, the Visit Florida website and Florida National Scenic Trails website, Austin Greenways and Trails, Florida Parks. It's a very good way to get a lot of tourism dollars. It will help the chamber, both chambers apply for tourism dollars if they're a designated community. So I have that application ready. That will be on the upcoming agenda. I have to get a couple more letters of support. But if we could get that designation, that would be huge for Steamhatchee from the standpoint that there are only 8 other communities in the state of Florida that's received this designation. And we are doing it based on the Steamhatchee River being a designated blueway so that you don't have to make commitments. Because if we did it from a walking trail standpoint, the board would have commitments. If we do it from a blueway, paddling trail standpoint, y'all don't have to do anything. So we took that into account because I didn't want you to have to commit to anything. And if we got that designation, we would be the first community in the state of Florida to be designated based on roadway. So a lot of work went into that application.
Good job.
I will be bringing it to you for approval, so
absolutely,
keep our fingers crossed on that.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
We're looking forward
good
to
job.
It.
Thank you. Thank you. This has been a project that I didn't expect to be a big deal. That has turned out to be a lot more work than I anticipated, but it's, I've learned so much in DEO and FWC and NFSNT are so supportive of us. Officer Greenways and Trails have been attending our meetings. So it's worked out really good for us from a networking standpoint.
That's great. That's right. Any questions or
any questions?
Anything?
Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Is this the board approval?
No,
this was just an update.
And the meeting tonight is at 6 o'clock, right here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Item 16, the board to discuss the upcoming funding cycle and possible project options for the Florida Recreation Development Assistance Program, the FRDAP, fiscal year 2020-2021, as agenda by the grants director. This is the one that I was referring to, and I want to hear about the funding cycle and everything, but I'd sure like for us to put this on the next workshop so that each commissioner can discuss various projects that we're interested in and see how this works out with the funding and everything. But if you give us a general overview of this.
Let me bring you the general update. And one quick thing on the trail thing tonight. We have finished putting together 11 by 17 maps we're going to pass out tonight. And we're going to have a large scale map of the county and trail networks for the public tonight, which we didn't have done in time for the agenda. I wrapped it up with Link Herbert yesterday. So if you are not present tonight, I will make sure in your mailboxes, you know, I'll have a copy of that 11 by 17 map.
Yeah, and is there any way that a copy of that could be put on our website?
We have a Facebook page for this. We were required to do it. And if you go to our website, there's the connection link. But that was one of the requirements of the grant to have that, and all of this is on that Facebook page.
And for those of us that do not do Facebook,
I don't do it either. I have
done Facebook. I don't know anything about it. I don't want to know anything about
it. Same here.
Some of the stuff is on the county website too.
Good. Yes. So it is all on there. That was part of the public participation process. Okay, on FERMAP, as I told you earlier, you can do two projects this year. You can do $200,000, you can do $200,000 and $150,000, or $250,000. You can do one project, or you can do none. I'm going to give you an example, and it may not be on your radar, but I'm going to give you an example of a very good project here in Taylor County, too, before we sit down, that you can get the points really, really easy. But in your packets were the sheets on how we go about getting points. And it's done by populations in the areas that you live in Florida. So it's kind of a difficult process to follow from a standpoint of y'all, because this isn't something you work with all the time. And we're population density 2. And we get points based on what they consider important for our population density. And if you look at like $100,000 and up, the point system works totally different. So what the state considers our priority is renovation projects, which what you're going to do at the sports complex, say if you do the batting cages, that is considered a renovation to your ball diamonds. Mm-hmm. And that is a big difference in points. Mm-hmm. So when you're thinking about projects important to you, I encourage you to think about something that's existing and doing a renovation or add on to that, because that helps. in turn, and what they consider priorities for our population density is support facilities, playgrounds, and restrooms. So that's considered important. Now, I know Hodges Park has been a goal for you.
It is. That's,
and I have another idea on that, but I'll talk to you about Hodges Park. But since the last Burnett grant was for Hodges Park, the only way you could get points for Hodges Park on the restroom is you have to do a complete tear down and rebuild, mm-hmm. which I know you're interested in.
I'm very much interested.
The problem is on Hodges Park, on Burnett, you have to have all these other elements to get your points.
Mm-hmm.
But that is possible. On Sports Complex, we would be doing it from a renovation standpoint because your last one of your last grants was for the Sports Complex. Your last three grants, like I told you earlier, was Steve Hatchie Park, Hodges Park, and an element at the Sports Complex. Also, in addition to these points, you have to go by what they call your relative need index. And for that, they consider football, picnicking, nature study, soccer, baseball, horseback riding, outdoor basketball, trailer camping, freshwater boat ramp use, bike riding, and unpaved trails. So your project needs to have something within that category to get points in that area. So that's part of the reason you need your planning process way out. Now, I have mentioned to LaWanda for, would you want to do a $50,000 project at Southside Park? And I went down and took pictures there last night. That's a renovation project. And just standing there looking at it, I went back, and you get your maximum 134 points like really easy there because there are so many needs right there. And you may want to look at that as a $50,000 project. I don't know. I mean, y'all, that's up to you. But that project is one of those projects you can do a whole lot of changes there really cheap within that $50,000 range and get your maximum points easy. So, and that was like your basketball courts need root striping. Your playground needs mulch there. I sent Luana some pictures last night because the playground there is pitiful. You can paint your picnic tables there, and that counts as picnic upgrades. The fence needs fixed. You need your parking restriped. You need a security light there, and you can do some landscaping. And you're already way over your points just with those little things right there. So you might want to look at something that needs renovating that you can do really cheaply.
Well, we're looking at, it comes time to look at, where we have a lot of activity
mm-hmm.
and what would be the most beneficial for the most mm-hmm. people, local and visitors. But certainly, I'm sure we'll all have our projects. And
yeah,
everybody knows that I'm very interested in Hodges Park, even though it's in somebody else's district. I am down there a lot, on a home down there, and I see a lot of activity, but we can certainly discuss that at the workshop.
The Land and Water Conservation funding cycle is coming up too. It follows immediately behind FERDAP. It's the same point system. It's ran by the same people, same program. It's all part of DDP. We use the Land and Water Conservation Grant to do a lot of the elements down at Keaton Beach Coastal Park. You get priority points if you are on a water area, which would be a good Hodges Park grant, for example. However, that grant does have a match that you cannot waiver because it's federal money. And then I know there was some interest. Commissioner Moody, you had some interest in Spring Warrior, and if we were to acquire that and you didn't want to use Restore Act, Florida Community Trust funding cycle is coming up. So that's another funding source to keep in mind for that. And that hasn't been mentioned during this, but the FERDAP grants also, like when we acquired Keaton Beach, the boat ramp down at Keaton Beach, the initial acquisition of that land, a FERDAP grant was used for acquisition, part of the acquisition there. You can apply to acquire land through FERDAP. Acquisition is one of the things, but I know, for example, you're not going to get spring water for $200,000. So it has to be a parcel of land that falls under that $200,000 mark if you're going to acquire it. But you can use it for acquisition, and you can turn around and do development dollars the following year to develop the site. Next year, you will be, if you submit two grants this year, you'll be eligible to submit one grant next year, because three is the maximum you can have open.
And the funding takes how many years?
Well, you will know next year if you're going to receive the grant. You will know next June, because it will be in next year's legislative cycle, and you have 3 years to expend the money.
Okay, and you can intermingle if, the FERDAP and the water and land conservation.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So if you had one big project, you can use both of them as long as they fit within
within the price system.
Got it.
And you can have one open land and water conservation, and the three open FERDAP grants. And then we frequently use to subsidize projects we've done. For example, at Steinhatchee, we have FERDAP and Coastal Partnership Initiative. Mm-hmm. If it's water access, we frequently will do that, and we frequently, like right now, the Steinhatchee Boat Ramp Docking Project is FWC and CPI, but you can intermingle Coastal Partnership. It's a small grant, but it's an annual grant, and it has a quick turnaround time, so we can intermingle that.
Well, thank you.
We just need to, like during your workshop or whatever, be pinpointing the projects you want to do, so we can have the public hearings and the public.
Yeah. Well, we have a workshop next week, and I would suggest that each commissioner think about your particular projects that you would like to see. And then I feel like we can discuss all of them and outline them, and whatever we choose, then get a design and a cost, and then go from there with what funding source we're going to use.
But right, I listed out three projects for LaWanda last night on the point system. If you know of a project you want, I can list out the number of points for you. You know, mm-hmm. if you will let her know, or
well, on one that workshop, then that would be essential. Mm-hmm. To
I gave her a sheet today, so that she knew yes. right where we stood at as far as points mm-hmm. and where we're at on that, and I listed out the elements, and I can do that for you. Sometimes if you change your wording, like for example, if you call the resurfacing of the sports complex an exercise trail, it's an extra point over a nature trail, and it's an extra point over a walking trail. So sometimes if you think about it, that's creatively. And like I said, for your sports facilities, landscaping counts. You can throw in $500 worth of landscaping to get that $200,000. It's just, you know, thinking outside the box, what am I going to do that's really little to get all that extra money?
Yeah, when we decide and make our list, then we'll certainly mm-hmm. be depending on you to mm-hmm. see how we can change it about if we need mm-hmm. to maximize the...
And I was hoping that Commissioner Gibbs would still be here. On the Aquatic Center he brought up, the city is eligible to apply for two FERDAP grants themselves. So if they wanted to do like an aquatic project or a park project, we have definitely, especially when Jack was here, we encouraged them fairly often to apply for a FERDAP grant. But they're eligible to apply as a city for FERDAP grants also, and that may be a good idea on an aquatic center. But I wanted to encourage the city that they can go after these same grants too if it's in town.
Thank you.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
For all your work. Item 17, the board to consider approval of the request made by the sheriff to add one stop sign to the intersection of Jimmy Archer Road and Joel Ament Road as agenda by Hank Evans, Public Works Director.
Yes, ma'am. The sheriff's approaching me about this particular intersection, and there's a limited sight distance back down Jimmy Archer Road when you pull up on Joel Ament looking back to the east. And request is if we can put a stop sign in there, they make that intersection a little safer.
Okay, let me just go back over the history of this. You were not here, but Commissioner Moody was here. And there were a couple of people that lived on Joel Ament that wanted us, first they wanted us to put a four-way stop. Well, first they wanted us to cut the big, large oak tree as you come to the intersection of Joel Ament and Jimmy Archer. If you look to the left, there's a big oak tree. It's still there, and they wanted us to remove that, but it happens to be on private property, and we could not do that. So then they wanted a four-way stop signs, and we decided not to do that. Then they wanted stop signs on Jimmy Archer. I would say 100% of the people from that point on Jimmy Archer to the end of Jimmy Archer opposed that stop sign. And nobody has contacted me with anything different, except I've been out of town for the last few days and I've tried to contact some of the people just to let them know what was going on, that this was on the agenda. I've heard from some of the people, three, that said no. We do not want a stop sign there. And I would like to be able to get response from the rest of my constituents on Jimmy Archer and see if they still feel the same or if they want a stop sign there. But as we discussed this several years ago, I think at that time we concluded that a stop sign could be more dangerous. And I know in my neighborhood, stop signs were put out, and you don't dare trust that stop sign. You better stop because people do not pay attention on Jimmy Archer Road for 100 years, or however long that road has been there, it's not had a stop sign. All of a sudden, if you put a stop sign in the middle of Jimmy Archer Road, I think you're going to create a worse situation, a more dangerous situation. But I do want to hear from the rest of my constituents, but I can tell you, I feel like probably they're going to say no. So this is not something that I'm interested in deciding today, but I'd like to hear from you all.
From my understanding, the sheriff recommends this.
What do you feel about this? And it being a regulatory sign, it has to be voted on by the police.
Understood. How do you feel about it? Because I'm not familiar with that intersection, so I don't know how many.
You have a limited sight distance when you pull up on Joel Ament, pull up Jimmy Archer, looking back to these, you have limited sight distance because of those large oak trees there.
Okay. Now, are people stomping there as a precaution?
I don't know. I'm not aware of any accidents there. This is just a request by the sheriff he brought to me to, and it being ready to add a member for the board.
Understood.
My guess is, Commissioner, that probably one of the people that wanted that stop sign there several years ago probably brought it to the sheriff because we at that time decided not to do it. Okay. But when you're on Joel Ament Road and when it intersects with Jimmy Archer, there's a stop sign there. And so you have to pull out a good ways to see around that oak tree. So you have to stop there anyway. If you were to, just my opinion, if you were to put the stop sign on Jimmy Archer too, and if somebody pulled up there and they didn't look carefully, they would assume that people on Jimmy Archer was going to obey that stop sign. I would never do that.
So that would bring the discussion of a four-way.
Well, it's a T-intersection. It's not a four-way.
Okay.
It would be a three-way, but, yes, you know, basically.
Well, we have to look
at that. I haven't been down that road in years, but I need to go look at it.
Yeah. You'll see.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of traffic on Jimmy Archer.
A lot more traffic on Jimmy Archer, I think, than there is on Joel Amen. Yeah, Kim.
Mr. Beagle, in your first comment, you mentioned that in the past year. In your comments, you mentioned that in the past you had considered the possibility of removing some of that, the trees within that, and you said it was on private property, so we wouldn't be able to. And I would ask council to probably weigh in a little bit on. In our code ordinances, there is a provision for a visibility triangle that is supposed to be void of obstructions at an intersection, depending on what type of intersection it is, that I would say that we could use to rely on to make a request for the vegetation to be removed, or to use that to substantiate our actions to remove that vegetation.
Yeah, I'm not, we cut down a lot of small vegetation, but you're talking about
I'm talking about outside of the right-of-way. Basically, what you do is you would go 100 feet down each leg of this T, join or connect the dots to make a triangle, and the area within that triangle is what you would remove that the side obstructions. I think you're right on point on putting up an additional stop sign for the westbound traffic on that. I think they're going to become callous to it and kind of ignore it because of their familiarity with that area. The visibility triangle, there are several places that we can do this throughout the county, but obviously this is one that if we could at least maybe delve into the legalities of it for public works or forces to go in and remove that when the landowner isn't in a position to be able to do that, that would be beneficial in many other intersections.
Yeah, because it's a huge oak tree.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Bishop?
Well, I always would say first, the first thing to do would be to contact the landowner to determine whether he or she or both of them would be in agreement with doing something about the tree before I would even try any legal situation looking at our ordinances to determine whether we could do it without their consent. I mean, that would be the first thing to do.
I agree wholeheartedly, but in the instance where, let's say, they wouldn't mind it being removed, but they were unable to remove that at their expense, then we would love to have the support of the ordinances to say, Hank, you can send your crews out there to do this, and this is how we justify it.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Sure. Well, I think for...
It's a much safer, passive way to address the situation.
It sure is, because for public safety, that oak tree obstructs the view. There's no doubt about it. I think we agreed before that we thought that the oak tree should come down, but the homeowners, I don't think, could do that at that time, and they may not can now, but for public safety, it probably needs to come out.
Well, I'm not familiar with Jimmy and Australian man throws. I mean, I've been there, but I can't remember. Is the tree such that it could be pruned? Or you got to take the whole thing? Okay.
It's a huge oak. And actually, the trunk of the tree is what obstructs the view.
Yes,
right, honey?
Probably a 32 to 36 inch water oak.
Oh. Okay. All right. That answers my question.
Is that something we need to... To get Mr. Hank to go talk to the people, or you need to talk to
them? I can contact the landowner and see if they would be okay with us going and taking three down.
Yeah.
And then we could fall back on our ordinance as far as us going on private property or safety concerns.
Yeah, it's an easy task for us to go out and make it down the center of the roads. It follows the code ordinances to the T. We can paint the line and show the landowner everything roadward of this line. We will remove that vegetation to improve the safety of the intersection.
I think that's the way to go. That's my opinion.
We just wanted to kind of push the issue to make sure that what we perceived was also achieved.
Yeah.
Make contact with the owners, find out, and bring it back to us.
Yes.
We can do that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
18. The board to discuss proposed Palmetto Ranches subdivision final plat as agenda by the county engineer.
Commissioners, this is the Palmetto Ranches subdivision. We received this quite some time ago, back in 2017. As you will see in the recommendation, there, the plat itself is ready pursuant to Chapter 177, but the associated items, that being the ones listed there, are not in a position to warrant approval. But just to kind of expedite the approval process, what staff is recommending is that you are in a position where you can approve the final plat contingent on the developer successfully resubmitting those items in an approvable format.
Sounds good. And on this one, it's the HOA documents that have not been completed?
No, ma'am. It's actually the Development Construction Improvement Agreement. It's basically an agreement in your code of ordinances that says we will, because we are requesting for the plat to be approved, which allows for the subdivision of the land for them to sell the lots, is being, they're requesting for it to be approved prior to constructing the improvements. Well, they need to provide assurance that they're actually going to complete those. That comes in the form of a development agreement as well as an associated surety bond. They have, the developers provided a surety document that is, as I stated in here, is a home equity line of credit. I can't see anything within that that extends itself to the Board of County Commissioners in the event the developer were to walk away from this. That is the reason for the surety, is that when we approve things that include the requirement to construct them, we have to have some assurance that we are in position to where we can complete those if they don't follow through with their end of the deal. On top of that, the developer provided two quotes which are very loosely acceptable under the code of ordinances. It's supposed to be an executed construction contract, but they're quotes. Both of those quotes were for $115,000 plus. The surety form that they were proposing was only $87,000. So that's, not only is it the wrong format, but it's the wrong amount. So what we are suggesting is just, let's return this information back to the developer, kind of avoid the delay of having to come back to you guys. The plat itself is ready to sign. We'll hold that signature in abeyance until we can get these other things in an approvable format, mm-hmm. and it'll make it a little bit more expeditious for the developer.
Right. So what you're saying is that we require ABC, and the developer has not provided A, B, and C.
We've got A, but not B and C.
Okay. So what we need to do then, and what he's recommending is that we go ahead and approve it contingent on the developer providing those things that are missing.
Yes, ma'am. It's very much a nicety. If you read the code of ordinances, I shouldn't be here submitting this, but because this one has taken so long to get to this point, and the plat is ready, these other things, to me, are just about nice across the piece that they need to go through before.
Okay. Is there any conversation or is there a motion?
Quick question. Should we personally talk to the person? And
Miss Alana asked, yes, sir.
And I do have a question, if I may, just for clarification. Within the ordinance, there's a list of security requirements, which are cashier's check, certified check, developer lender county agreement, interest-bearing certificate of deposit, irrevocable letter of credit, and surety bond. An irrevocable letter of credit would not be a home equity loan.
No, that's correct.
Or a line of credit, excuse me, is what you're...
Yes, ma'am. I do not see any beneficiary provision within that home equity line of credit. It is literally... if you read the document, it is an open letter of credit against this individual's home that they are allowed to borrow against and pay back over a time period of 10 years. It is not an encumbered monetary source that in the event something were to, say we got halfway through it and this ain't working out, well, then there is no provision for the Board of County Commissioners to utilize the balance of those funds to complete projects because we've already approved the final plan.
So a surety bond has not been issued already.
No, sir.
Well, Ms. Lawanda, what was her answer when you talked to her about it?
We did not discuss the, well, let me back up. My communication has been through her attorney's office as far as this particular question. So I have not spoken with her personally about the home equity line of credit. I believe that her understanding was that it would suffice. But we did send communication through her attorney's office that that was not acceptable. And it's because it cannot be assigned, basically, to the Board of County Commissioners if there's a default, and the board has to assume the completion of the project. Is that?
It was twofold. One, it's insufficient amount, and two, it has no beneficiary.
Correct.
Was the signature ever notarized?
No, sir. That's why I'm saying there's an abundance of things that aren't right.
I looked on there and it wasn't notarized, and you know, and again, when you do these things, remember what happens when there's a storm or there's something that you know. I read the letters, and she said, "Well, it's a private, you know, subdivision, for lack of a better term." But guess who folks come to when there's a flood or there's a catastrophe or something, or you can't get the ambulance in there, you can't get, they come to us, and then I'm mashing my teeth when y'all are looking at me saying, can we do this? It's on private property, you know. So the thing is, it's number one, it's the amount's not sufficient. Number two, it's not a surety. Number three, that, you know, she signed it, but it wasn't notarized. And if somebody comes back and notarizes that signature subsequent, that's illegal. You understand what I'm saying? So there's things that need to be corrected for the protection of not only the board, but the protection of our citizens.
That's right. So I guess what we're looking for is a motion then to approve this contingent on the developer providing everything that's that is requested and set forth that we need. Is there a motion like
that? Make a motion.
Okay, we got a motion by Commissioner Murphy. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
We got a second by Commissioner Moody. Any further discussion?
I got a question. This plat will not be presented for recording until all that's worked out.
There's going to be two signatures that will be withheld. That means mine and the chairman's.
Okay. I want to say something. And in my district, I had a road that was paved years ago, and the county accepted it. Had about 3/4 inch of pavement on real poor lime rock. And then sooner or later, it got to the point where it needed something done to it. And finally, we motor grader man went down and graded the whole road. Y'all remember this. We had to go down and mill the whole road down at Strickland Landing.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
That's the kind of thing you get into if you don't do it right.
That's right.
And I mean, that's what I want to, you know, bring that up. We just, if we're going to stand behind it, accept it, it needs to be done right.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Agreed.
So we have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Item 19, the board to discuss proposed Palmetto Ranch subdivision construction plans as agenda by the county engineer.
In the proceeding items, one of those components, because the developer is requesting final plat approval prior to the construction being completed, they are required to provide construction plans that cover those improvements. I have gone through, this is probably about the fourth version, and identified those items that need to be addressed to reach constructability. And I've listed those here. Once they address those items, the construction plans will be ready for approval. But they are not.
Okay. Any discussion from the board, attorney?
All we have to do is review them, right?
No, sir. We actually have to approve them. And what I've recommended is that you will approve a contingent on them addressing the items that I have listed within this recommendation.
All right.
Anybody want to make that motion?
Is that you've got there, is that to do it up to standard and correct way of review. They haven't agreed on any of that, I mean.
Some of these, there are quite a few of these that are repeat items that the issues are, continue to be there each time. I will continue to not approve them until they address them. And until these get approved, you will not see me request you to sign the final plat.
Okay. Is there a motion to go with this contingent on, approve this contingent on them supplying everything that they need?
I move.
Second.
Here we go. Motion by Commissioner Gibbs, second by Commissioner Murphy. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Thank you, Commissioner. Item 20, the board to continue discussion of the fee schedule for roll-off site disposal as agenda by Gary Womble, Environmental Services Director.
And I went back and we took out the pickups on the basically the payment plan, and that's about all we've done on this. I don't know what you guys you want to discuss.
You took out the pickups?
Pickups.
Okay, meaning that if debris is brought to the roll-off site and it's in a, it's pickups of the size, that that would not incur an additional cost. If the board wishes to move forward with the invoicing suggestion that Mr. Womble made previously.
Well, obviously, I've spent a lot of time going over this, and I know Ms. Murphy has provided some data, and there's a copy for the board. I actually wanted to put together this little packet this morning, and then I took the information from the clerk and put it into a table. So it's easy to see and easy to see what other people have done. But I go back to our ordinance, and our ordinance says household garbage only. Now, ever since, right?
I pulled the codified ordinance, and what I find, and I did that this morning, but, and Conrad, I may need your help with this, I know that the discussion has been that the assessment is for household garbage or for household waste, but I could not find the language in our codified ordinance. I think we need to look some more. It discusses a fee for household, and I believe the intent was that the assessment be for household waste. But I'm wondering if that meant no C&D.
Well, that's real fuzzy. And
yes,
when we're trying to make critical decisions, and I'll ask our attorney, but it seems like to me we need an ordinance that's clear cut, that it's not trying to figure out what the intent was, but what does the ordinance say? So if indeed it is for household garbage only, then ever since I've been here, and I don't know how much further back than that, we've certainly not abided by our ordinance. Now, at one of these meetings that we've had recently, I know there was discussion, and I myself was talking about people that pick up their yard debris. I'm not talking about cutting down a big oak tree or a pine tree and tearing down a barn or a big chicken coop or something, but just when you clean up your normal yard debris, that, in my opinion, should be added to the ordinance so that we can pick up that. And then have a different set of rules or whatever you want to call it for your C&D and things like that. So I'm just wondering, Mr. Bishop, do we need to start with making sure that we have the right ordinance?
think in the definitions, it...
I'm not sure.
Okay. Here's what the ordinance says with regard to solid waste. Solid waste means garbage, refuse, or other discarded solid materials, including solid waste materials resulting from domestic, industrial, commercial, or agricultural operations, governmental operations, and from community activities, but does not include hazardous waste or other materials deemed to be a significant danger to pollute the water resources. That's what solid, and that's what you've been going by, right? Is that a yes?
That's a yes.
Okay. All right.
In layman terms, what does that mean exactly?
Well, there's a separate definition for construction debris.
Right.
That further clarifies garbage versus construction debris.
Let's see what I'm looking for. It. Construction, this is under a definition again, it's another section on definitions in this. Ordinance. Construction and demolition debris means discarded materials generally considered to be non-water soluble and non-hazardous in nature, included but not limited to steel, glass, brick, concrete, asphalt material, pipe, aluminum soffit, gypsum, wallboard, roof and shingle, and lumber from the construction or destruction of a structure as part of a construction or demolition project, or from the renovation of a structure for purposes of this subdivision, with pallets and carpeting padding will be considered as construction debris.
So it's clear and defined.
I thought that it was pretty clear and defined in this ordinance. Again. Have we been following that part?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay. All right. I got a yes on one and a no on the other, right, Gary?
Yes.
Okay. So I think it's pretty clear what the definition is. Don't you agree as a solid waste director?
It's clear. To me, it is. It's clear. It's been defined.
So what we're doing, what we've been doing then, with allowing yard debris, that's okay?
Pursuant to what solid waste is defined at, yes,
okay,
ma'am.
So we're okay with that?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
I think so.
I'll give you a chance, okay? Okay, so it seems like then we have a couple of things that we have to decide. If with our garbage and our yard debris, we're saying that that's okay. If we're going to continue to do that, which I'm for continuing to do that, and are we going to keep the price the same, then we have to address the C&D. And how we're, you know, where's it going to be taken, or how are we going to charge for it, or whatever. So, what is your recommendation?
Well,
I'm going to give you a chance.
I don't have all the answers on this, and I still think if we charge, like on the sheet right there, going in, and we handle the invoice, you know, as far as not taking any cash or anything like that. It will put a little bit on Handy May, I'm sure. At what level, I don't know. I think we could do a lot of the paperwork for, but she's going to probably have to receive the money or the payment for that.
Would it not be the same or similar to what we do with our boat ramps fees? Okay. So our staff would take the responsibility of invoicing and collecting the funds, and we would take that information to Ms. Annie May.
Yes, I think that's the only way
for
fair to
finance.
So what do you think about doing like a ticket to an example loan? You will have a 2 or 3 part form?
Either that or another suggestion was a prepaid, some type of prepaid ticket. Where we would pre-sell, you know, a ticket for so many trailer pulls. I just think that could get very complicated as far as trying to decipher, okay, well, what size is this trailer and what size is this trailer? And for someone to to...
This is kind of what you're looking at, what we did.
Right.
Right here.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, you know, it just...
Did you have one of them in the paper?
No, I took this, just, I pulled this out, I brought this, you can look at it though. That's what we received, like, I think that person brought in 5 loads of that in one day.
Yeah. As a citizen, if I'm going to do something and it's Saturday, and oh, I've got to get prepaid for something, so I can't do it because I haven't prepaid. When I go to prepay, I would not like to have, I'm just speaking for me, I would not want to do that. I'd much rather take it there, and you look at what I've got, and then write me a ticket, because if you're prepaying, say, okay, I only have a 4x8, and you show up with an 8x12, then what is the attendant? It shouldn't be on the shoulders of the attendant then to argue with the customer. And so that's a concern of mine. The other thing is, now, has collection been a problem with the boat ramp? You know, you've had some people tell you, I'm not going to pay it, right?
Well, we've had people to justify us. We've had people to say, you got free, go ahead and put it on that trailer. And you've had different ones that we work through those issues. We don't get as many personnel anymore. You know, they either provide us proof that they had a sticker or they can't get back.
Regardless if we take money on site or if we do it for you based on these numbers that you're showing.
You cannot take it on site.
I'm just saying regardless, whichever way, okay, if you took it on site or if you put a ticket in, these numbers and pricing that you put on there based on the volume from what I've seen, this is going to get you out of a deficit within a year. Do you not agree?
It's
going to put a big dent.
And if I can interject, now we have to take into consideration that we may have to hire at least a part-time employee to process this paperwork, and this is something new for us, so it's hard to predict how many FTEs you'll need for that.
Right. Now, as I went through the information that Ms. Murphy provided and made this table, if you go through it, you'll see where a lot of counties, their C&D is WastePro. WastePro does it. And just like Calhoun County, it's WastePro. Some of them, they prepay for a container, and then when it's full, the county picks it up. Some of them have a landfill and it's paid by the weight. But now, in terms of a transfer site, what is a transfer site?
It's where they bring in, you got to establish site, the EG regulates as far as what they can do or can't do, their hazardous waste. It's a plot of land where they come in, set it up, and they bring in all the debris that is not household, and they transfer it to the, like, it's here to Greenville.
In Dixie County, what they have is a transfer site, and everybody carries their stuff there, in Dixie County, because you pay $44,000 a year for transportation costs to be able to get that stuff to Greenville. So they put it at that staging site and then, like, they pick it up and take it to the regional landfill.
They all 25 cents of the loads, and we all take the same kind of loads.
Yeah. And then from one of the counties, they actually contract with WastePro to go to that site, pick up stuff, and take it to the landfill.
But Calhoun County, and say for instance with Dixie County, they have a transfer site and they pay per the fee schedule. Mm-hmm. In addition to that,
they pay a ton.
Yeah, you know. So if this is everybody, it seems like has something sort of different. And it's just good to know what other people do, but we still have to decide what's best for us.
And if you see on, like, when somebody says curbside, it's usually WastePro running that operation. They control the whole gamut then, and that's what they want to do. That's how they make their money, the curbside and the transfer. A transfer station is very expensive to put in, so they got to reap some money back on that.
What was our estimate on the transfer station from WastePro?
WastePro said $1.5 million per station.
Per station?
Investment on their part. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I know Franklin County and Calhoun County, they exclusively use Westbrook.
Walco, they do.
Mandatory door-to-door Westbrook pickup. And but anyway, let's kind of make it so that if you're picking up your yard trash, we can continue to do what we're doing, not pay extra. Mm-hmm. And then for the CMD, the complaints that I've had is that they don't have anywhere to take it, and it needs to be fixed. So your recommendation again is,
I think you go by
right
that list, look at that list, and look at the pricing on it. That's just a rough draft. If you guys want to look at it,
it says rate schedule for vegetated debris. So if you come up there with an 8-foot trailer, mm-hmm. and we've had high winds, and somebody's yard is full of little limbs and pom-poms and all of that, are they going to be charged $22?
What they should do, if they got a pickup pulling it, I would put it in the pickup because the pickup's free. That's what I would.
Okay, so the pickup, we need to make that clear then if we do that.
We took the pickup out of
it.
I took all the pickups out, like you guys asked for.
Okay.
All the trucks, pickups.
Okay. Before we, I have somebody in the audience. So if you want to come forward, state your name and address.
Lisa Faulkner, 18610 East Royal Oak, Leisure Sheets. My husband, as much as you know, has a lawn business. We have had issue at the beach and in Cincinnati with people's yard debris. Now these people pay taxes, they pay whatever we all pay for garbage or whatever, what we used to pay. I don't know if we can pay it more, we don't in the county or the city, maybe does or whatever. But anyway, we are not allowed to take yard debris to the dump, even because we're a commercial business. We've been stopped. We have to take it all the way to Greenville to the landfill ourselves. And I'm talking palm fronds, small winds, the storms we've had. And it's been a really pain for us. And that, I wanted, when he read that and said that garbage, lawn debris is included in that, I'm asking, is it included for us? Because up to now, hasn't it?
Who wants to address that?
My understanding is that we have not allowed contractors to utilize the roll-off site for several years, many years.
Right. But we're doing business for citizens of this county cleaning their yards. We should be able to haul it just like they would.
Right.
Why can't we?
We've got a process that we've been working on where you can tear it down to the incinerator site and unload it. That's what we've been trying to put in place, to use our incinerator to burn the kind of debris you're talking about.
Right.
But we were going to ask a fee for it, you know. And
that's, well, and that's, and then we would just have to charge the homeowner.
That's right.
You know, but if it's legal and acceptable, we need to be able to do it.
Right.
Even though we're a contractor, it's still citizens' garbage.
Yeah, well, see, that's the same argument that I presented when we had someone here that wanted to start a garbage pickup business. And anybody that wanted to contract with him, like they contract with you for yard, to pick up their household garbage, they would pay him whatever fee he charges. But when he takes their garbage that they didn't take and he takes it to the roll-off, then I've always said I didn't think that there should be a fee for that, because what's the difference in them taking it down and you taking it down? But see, Lisa, what the problem comes in is when you throw mattresses up there and refrigerators.
I'm not saying that.
The biggest room,
yes,
and
ma'am.
80-foot pine trees, and we're not charging for that, and it's breaking us. So we have to do something about that. But I agree with you.
Lisa.
If the only thing you're taking is what they would have taken, then
but it's a big problem. The person who's going to do the household. I think that y'all agreed that he had to prove that
that person had paid $140.
He has.
Prior to him dumping anything.
Yeah, so what she's saying, Lisa, is that it's $140 a year is what we all pay for our, you know, for
debris, garbage.
Yeah. So with this person, we just wanted to make sure that he proved to us that these people had paid their $140. He just didn't go, you know.
Right. You know, picking up their like garbage.
Yeah. What happens is there's a lot of them people that bill for $140, but they never pay it. And we have no way of collecting.
And you know, and then thinking about that, I may be guilty. I don't know when I've seen a bill for that.
It's on your tax bill.
Okay, so when you pay your taxes. Okay, so I'll pay it.
But they pay their taxes and don't add $140 in it. And
well, the problem
I'll pay whatever it says, I think.
Those people who are covered by homestead exemption, $25,000. The only thing on their tax bill is the $140 special assessment for garbage.
And then they won't
and they don't care if they pay or not.
But you can't have them, you can't make people pay
that. Well, it comes a lien on their property, but and every 7 years it just drops off. They don't ever pay it. So you got a bunch of those that don't pay. And they don't sell certificates, that's just no
better. Okay, well.
But I'm trying to understand what you're saying. And then on the other hand, you know, we have to protect. We can't provide a service where we're not making ends meet, so
right,
we're
staying
at home. So, what are the other commissioners? What, Mr. Gibbs, what are you? What's your thoughts on that? Of somebody like them that just carrying what I would have took to the runoff anyway.
Yeah, if I may, what it says in our ordinance about disposal of limbs is that all limbs brought to the roll-off sites in the county for disposal shall be no longer than 48 inches in length and 12 inches in diameter. So we haven't prohibited the disposal of limbs. We've limited the size.
And no, that we prohibited.
That in itself is what causes an issue if anyone brings a trailer full of trees or they cut down trees and you have, you know, big sections, because that's clarified in our ordinance.
But I do think from what I've heard here in the past that if you're a contractor and you pull up there and you've got your sign on your truck or something, then you're told that you can't drop it off there, no matter, am I right?
You're right. And what happens is it ain't the one person coming up there, it's the person that brings multiple loads in a day's time. You'll get 5-8 loads a day of 16-foot trailers. And some of them will have try to get in with contractors, some of them aren't even contractors. And that's what's killing them, is the multiple loads and stuff like that.
Well, I got another question. The beaver stuff, where do you put that? Where are we supposed to take that if we have beaver?
That's the county board that's showing the doctor to allow just limb stuff to be carried to the incinerator.
Okay, and what's the time frame on getting that, maybe? Where do we have it?
We're about there.
Yeah, it's wood bomb. It can't be contaminated with any crude. But there's a fee associated with the incinerator. Well, that's fine. We'll just have to pass that fee on to the people and the angel. I'm like, we're going to get it. Like you say, it's not that. But if you want your dog, you don't. Well, I look at it. You need to pay for it.
Going to the incinerator would be better than going to Green Bay.
Where is the incinerator going to be located?
It's going to be at the landfill. It's already set up, and we'll set it up and give it around.
I'll be out of your way about that, but I'm just talking to you. All these years we've been having to find a place to take stuff or burn it. You can't burn no more like you used to. And I was just wondering, with that being said, if we were legal, we need to dump.
Right.
Okay.
So, thank you.
So, if we
If we're going to talk about President Joe to do this, then how long is it going to take us to do this? Okay, we've done that.
Well, right now we're waiting on paperwork, but also our
I've done
and,
it.
He's done it.
Oh,
he's
done? I've done it.
Conrad has done it. I'm sorry.
Because we can't tell people this is your option and then it's not really an option. Well,
the tractor has caught on fire and we got insurance working on it. We haven't burned in 4 months right now waiting on that.
We've been waiting 4 months on the insurance? What are they saying?
We need to get a tractor. That's the issue. You wait on it.
We just got our final.
They worked on it and they came back and said the motor's burned up in it too.
But that doesn't prohibit people from. We can still take the debris. We just are not burning it right now because the tractor's been down.
Okay.
So we can still take the debris. That's not. We have plenty of room to store it.
So we need to make sure that the public and all the workers at the landfills has a map. That this is where the incinerator is, and these are the fees at the incinerator, and you can go and take it there during these times, and so that, you know, that we've got all our ducks in a row.
Absolutely.
Look at that though.
Well, don't we need to just have this incinerator that I've done the paperwork, it needs to come before the board, right?
I'll have to go back and see where we are on that.
Okay. All right. Well, if you need any help?
Yes, sir.
I want to make sure I've done what I'm supposed to do.
I think you have.
So because
I hope I have.
So it has to come before the board. We're talking July the 8th before we can actually, have this in operation then. Okay. So between now and then, if that's what we're going to do, what are people to do? What is she to do?
I don't know. I guess do what she's been doing since then, hauling the Greenville. I don't know.
Let me put my hands on the ordinance and then determine where we are with that. And then we will take the appropriate steps to put everything in operation that we need to. And I'll be happy to reach out to Ms. Faulkner. And
have a workshop next week.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You can advertise for a special meeting before the workshop or after it.
That's right.
Adopt these fees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can. So thank you.
And you can give me.
What fees are we going to adopt? You know, we've got orders already said we can go at $14 for a dollar before a month.
You're talking about Lynn for bringing the incinerator.
Yeah.
What's
yeah.
That for
yeah.
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 You got one?
Yes, I got one. But we've been had this up. This ain't just new, is it?
No.
Okay, so.
I think I'm not sure what the charge was. The one that you remember at the incinerator?
Was it?
$4. $4.9?
Yes.
For cubic yard?
Yeah. Okay, all I'm saying is, you know, we've been whooping. I've been on here 3 years and we've been talking like this ever since. Get the incinerator running, buy the tractor. We need a tractor, so we should have had one. County this big shouldn't let one tractor stop an operation.
That's the way I feel about
it. It hasn't stopped the brain.
We're still thinking.
Well, there's something wrong if everybody coming up here don't understand it. There's something wrong. Either we're not telling the newspaper to advertise it.
We haven't put it in there yet, or we haven't even got the paperwork for this yet on the incinerator. There's not a person been out there yet.
Okay. Uh-huh. How long has the incinerator been?
2, maybe 3 years.
And it hasn't worked since we had it?
Yeah, we've been burning all the time, yes. But we've been pulling from the roll-off sites. We haven't had the public come in there yet. No public people.
Okay.
The only one that comes in is Hank.
Okay.
For public purposes.
So, we're going to now let the public bring their
big contracts, right?
You're going to go ahead and start that.
Yeah.
We just need to get our hands on the approved ordinance, and we will put it into operation.
Okay, that's a promise.
Okay, what I want to see is at our workshop next Thursday that we've got this laid out from beginning to end so that we can decide on it and on July the 8th that we vote on something and put it in place
and that we're prepared to let the public know, probably through the newspaper, and each roll-off should have a handout or a sign and a sign posted so that people clearly know what our policy is. And if they come up there with, if they come up there with a refrigerator and a stove, they can't be burned out there. So what are they going to do with that?
They've been dumping it. I mean, we're
all... We take white goods in our roll-off signs.
So we're still going to take it. They just, they're going to pay for it per this schedule.
If you guys adopt that, yes.
Okay. So, I mean, I want to conclude this on July the 8th. Because like Commissioner Dent said, Commissioner's been kicking this can down the road for a long time. But I think that we're getting very close to putting something into place that's good. Do you agree?
I agree.
Okay. That's been our goal.
And you're not going to put it at the workshop.
No, but what I want to do is at the workshop, we have it all laid out from start to finish. And on July the 8th, we're going to vote on something, and end this, right? And everything's going to work out great, right?
I hope so. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Hold on just a minute. Mark, and then all of you next.
Mark Bauer, 3384 Solano Road. Obviously, I don't know what happens between meetings, but I do remember at least one meeting in June that we did approve the ordinance on allowing contractors to go to the incinerator site. You did not approve the fee schedule for that, and that's what we approved.
That's right.
July 8th.
That's right. Like I said, from beginning to end, I want it spelled out in the workshop so that on July the 8th, we've taken care of everything. Yes, sir.
I left to call my office to find out what paperwork has been done. My secretary trying to look it up on the computer and see what we've done or what we haven't done.
Okay. Thank you.
I hope. Like I said, you know, so we're going to get to the bottom of where we are. We're going to get to the bottom of this fire.
Yes, we are. We're going to fix this. Colin?
Should have looked and seen. I don't know why. But solid waste has always been a problem. I had to get the landfill set up. And it's really interesting. You go on Rossaw Regional Landfill website and look. Jefferson County, per capita garbage is about 6% of what ours is. They recycle. We take metal to the roll-off site. You take it to Greenville, okay? Right? Good. Where do you guys?
We go downtown.
Where?
Right downtown.
But anyway, they're a lot of people recycle the other thing. I know there's Swan County on 253. There's a big sign that says debris recycling center. It's just piled up. Anything that's got to be cleaned down. Take it to a grind, we grind it. They set it to regional place in Gainesville, like it's probably. We don't need to take leads for anything. You know, there's two different signs. It's 45 all the way down there, about to bring it up a lot of ways. There's a lift of feet for C&D. We pay two different sides. Anyway, so I'd like to say, look at some big picture, how many of all leads, they have to Greenville. Think about that. There's nothing happening about it. We just need to figure out a better way. I don't have an answer. I don't know if I can get up here, but we can look at it when we get to recycle it, what we can do, and it's probably burning it. It's an option, but you get that. You stack it and grind it, turn it around, and take it to the GP or refrigerator. Yeah, go ahead. There is a lot of it called ground
wood chips and processes to Gainesville. They do about 9 a day.
I started that. In wood chip with John Cruz, and we care about the meal.
Okay, but let me say this.
Okay.
We're talking about that, and I think that's what we need to do. If we've got wood product, we don't need to burn it, not hoard it. Then we got other places that will take it. The Grand Gainesville Regional Utility will take it, or GP will take it. Another thing we got, I don't know why we set up the $44,000 a year we give back to Dixie County.
Well, that wasn't supposed to be.
Wasn't supposed to be?
It was supposed to be 2 years and get set up.
All right, we need to take it back. We need to walk it back.
It's still on the list.
The citizens of Taylor County and the other counties, yep, that Greenville, the original, original use of the landfill, they don't need to be burdened with other people's problems. Everybody needs to stand on 2 feet.
So you got the
Now, what do we need to do to walk back from that contract?
You got the Fayette County hold. They can't vote. They can take litter up there from the volume of scale. It ought to be cheaper, you know. But anyway, a big problem, there's no incentive at regional landfill to be efficient. I tell you, I think Durabi that started, he runs it, does all that stuff. You're looking for a new attorney? Okay, right.
Distribution.
Anyway, look at also a regional landfill website, and you learn a lot. And there's data available per county, and it's simple. What's the per capita use of solid waste that goes to ourselves? And we went to Yankton to Tallahassee, got the money to plan the regional landfill. We're already paid the serious problem when it started that purchase one. But anyway, this was long term.
I agree.
It just don't make no sense.
That's right.
Yeah.
We have to stay at it.
Right, I agree. Distribution.
An ordinance of the Board of County Commissioners of Taylor County, Florida, allowing contractors and citizens to pay a fee to dispose of vegetation debris, tree debris, at the county incinerator site, providing for fees to be set by resolution, providing for severability, and providing an effective date. That's the ordinance that I prepared, and it provides for that, and it provides that you set the fee by resolution.
Yes.
So set
that's
the fee.
That's what we need to do. Yes.
You set the fee.
We have the money.
You know?
So that's, we can talk about
this
that.
Was back in, this was back in May.
Yeah.
This was back in May.
Yeah. We'll talk about the fee on Thursday, and then on June on the 8th, we'll
approve a resolution, and then we'll be done.
Yeah. I mean, think of everything that we need to do to fix this.
Okay. I just...
And a workshop and one meeting.
Yes.
There's a timetable that Gary had talked about one time. You couldn't let it sit on the yard out there, but certainly it's time to right.
And the DEP, they want you to rotate that out. We're still in the limit on that, and we get this thing up and running, we'll be fine. Now, on our debris, now like steam hatching and all that, we haul that to the incinerator. We haul all the wood debris. The only debris that goes to off-sell it if it's contaminated. And what that happens is if somebody comes in at night and contaminates the containers by throwing, when they're going through the mess, you get, you know, drugs or whatever they're getting out of the garbage, they'll contaminate the limb dens and stuff. That's the only time we go over there. Now, on the grinding part, when the hurricane came through, we set up with Steve Spradley then when he was with the county. We ground everything they had down there thinking we could take it to Gainesville and all that to get it done. We took a sample over there and they rejected the whole thing. So we ground all that for no reason.
Why did they reject
it? Instead of know what they burned, it was too dirty.
Oh, my word.
So we ground that whole thing. Sam Boyer was down there. It's expensive. FEMA paid it, but it was, they rejected everything we took. So I had to take it out to the incinerator, I had to haul it out there to let it sit. And dry ice.
Did you find out from them what they would take?
They were really particular on what they took. Steve did. He said he was in awe when he got over and got back on it. They rejected everything we took.
Wow. Now, what we're talking about, this will fix the problem in steam hatching, right? Because I've had calls from people down there that, you know, with their C&D, you know, they're complaining that there's nowhere to take it and they don't want to drive from steam hatching to Greenville, and I don't blame them. That's just not practical.
Okay.
So, but this will take care of, and they can rent. It'll be public that they can rent a dumpster, and then we'll deliver it and pick it up.
We don't.
Waste Pro will do that, and then they negotiate with Waste Pro, whatever Waste Pro
they have all that in.
Okay.
Just for the board's information, I believe I recall now why we had not asked for the resolution to be adopted as of yet, because the rate schedule is within the rate schedule that we brought to the board I think back in the end of May or June. So the vegetative debris rate schedule is part of this schedule that we presented to the board. So I think in the discussion of whether we prepay or whether we issue an invoice or how we're going to address the rates is why we have not asked our attorney to draft the resolution as of yet. So maybe what we need to do is if we're not ready to move forward on a rate schedule for our citizens or for our roll-off sites, that's the board can give us some direction on the vegetative debris rate that you want in the resolution to come back to the board the first meeting in July.
Yeah, I want to work all of that out next Thursday. All the details.
Okay.
What are the issues that you're going to run into, say, area of problem? You issue vehicle tickets for people in the and they got 30 days to pay it. What if you have 10 of those that don't come in and pay? Then you're going to have to suspend their usage until they pay the previous ticket. So somebody's going to have to coordinate that at the roll-off sites that know you have a ticket that dumped a 5-trailer of garbage and it was $35 and he didn't pay.
Well, I think that's what management, you know, you would provide that to the sites, all of them, because they may go from one to the other. And the roll-off attendant shouldn't have to be the one to argue with them. Call Gary. Get your cell phone number, let him talk to you.
Wouldn't it, Gary, wouldn't it solve that issue there and people have to argue with them and think about them ahead of time?
Well, I'm open to anything. I think it's going to be, when we first initiate it, it's going to be a little painful doing it, you know, when we cut the hills down, how that was. I think it's going to be a learning process as we go through this. We may have to, you know,
we're going to have an amnesty period there for a few weeks, but people need to get a look. It's in the, if we put it in the newspaper every week, you've got to go get your ticket for a failure, you know, and or whatever. That's cut out a lot of them not worrying about them paying it. They'd be paying when they. All we'd have to do is
it'd be like Pam says, that if that person has got a day off on Saturday and they had a tree to call, and the tax collector's office is not open for them to get a prepaid permit, and that's the only day they got off for next week, then they need to get that disposed of while they're off, and it's not available on that time. Get that
free pay.
That's the only thing that I see.
And if they come up with a larger trailer, the roll-off attendant should not have to
be in that position. If they don't pay it, the attendant's not going to know everybody. Well, you want it not paid, you know.
You have the list.
When you have to look at the list and say, well, what's your name? He's not on this list. I mean, that's
well, and that would require, I think this is the discussion we had previously, that's going to require everyone that goes to a roll-off site with a trailer to show identification, and then the attendant would have to check that against the list.
But they're supposed to be doing that anyway.
No, ma'am, they give us an ID card.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have a name on it. That's, I think, the discussion we had previously, which led into the discussion of prepay, you know, if we need to ask people to prepay for this. The only other, I don't know if we could require citizens to pay by check at the time, and we just will not handle cash. I know a lot of people they don't even deal with
trash
anymore because they're obsolete.
That puts the roll-off attendant having to collect all that stuff, and I just don't think there should be any exchange between the roll-off attendant and money check, whatever. You know, that's not what they're there doing, in my opinion.
Well, I gotta say it.
Yes, sir.
Your ordinance provides a method of payment.
Okay, what does it say?
Yeah, no, this is the codified ordinance, which I don't think is correct. I think our codified ordinance does refer to that, but if I'm not mistaken, that ordinance was actually, I don't know if it was repealed or not repealed, but I think our question is that ordinance still in effect or not that identifies the methods of payment?
Okay, well, we need to look at that then.
Right.
Okay, when she talks about codified ordinances, you know, the Municipal Code Corporation codifies our ordinances. I do the ordinance, you know, and put an ordinance number on it, and then they, every once in a while, they come back and look at it, and then try to put it in the code. And this, what this says, now I'm going to read you what this says here. And then we got to look at what was subsequent, okay? If there was something. It says, method of payment. Fees for disposal of construction and demolition debris shall be collected at the roll-off site by the attendant on duty at the time of disposal. Because of the variable nature of the volume and types of materials, there will be no charge account for annual permits issued for construction and demolition debris. Payment may be made either by cash or check. Now, this is back a while back. And then it says rate schedule, which is the very next thing. This is ordinance number 2001-11. And, you know, 20 years ago, or 18 years ago, rate schedule. The director of solid waste shall prepare a schedule of fees for the disposal of construction and demolition debris based upon the type and volume of the material to be disposed. The Board of County Commissioners shall set the rate schedule annually by resolution. Mm-hmm. That's what was passed, you know, before anybody was on the board except in me. Okay? But I'm the one that wrote I wrote the ordinance. Pursuant to the board's instructions at that particular time. Now, times change.
That's right.
You know, times change. No one knew that we were going to have such a problem with roll-up attendants collecting money. We didn't, you know, nobody thought about that. So what needs to be done is, if we haven't amended it, then we need to amend it.
Sure.
Just like our chairperson was saying, and Gary. But what needs to be done, too, is when you have a question, first thing you need to do is go to the ordinance, and then the second thing to do is to call the administrator, and she'll call me, or you call me. So we can be consistent on what we're doing, and where the citizens, where you will know what you can do. And I'm going to say this too, and y'all might not like this one. With regard to construction and debris, you know, what we're talking about right now, using the incinerator. You've got the incinerator ordinance. You just don't have a fee schedule. So conceivably, I could take my stuff out there for free, right? Until you get a fee schedule.
That's right.
Why not? You see what I'm saying? To help you and to help the other contractors. Now, you might not like that one, Gary, and tell them why you don't like it, but that... You know, I mean, we're in a situation where we're trying to get this straightened out.
Mm-hmm.
Are y'all following me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, here's one thing I would recommend from what he just said. Let's get that fee schedule, a recommendation by next Thursday, and we'll have a special meeting, and we'll go ahead and adopt something. We don't need to leave that hanging out there no longer than we can, that we have to.
Mm-hmm.
That needs to be fixed ASAP.
And we also need to fix how they pay it, and that would have to be by amending, if we haven't already done so.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
If we haven't already done so, and understand that, you know, that there's a period of time I'm going to be gone, you know, from July the 8th until July the 15th or something. I told y'all about that, because Sonny will be here. If y'all instruct it, you know, Sonny and Karen can get that done as a practical matter. And I've already written down to do a resolution on the incinerator. I'm going to do that, but I'm going to leave the fee blank, okay?
Yes.
Pursuant to this ordinance that we've already passed with regard to the incinerator.
Yes. So on Thursday, we have to decide how the people are going to pay. If it's through invoice, it seems like that's not fail-proof, it's not perfect, but it seems like right now that might be our best option. And as Gary said, let's see how it works, and then we may have to tweak. You know, if we find something that can be done a better way, then it would be imperative that we fix it. But we got to start somewhere.
It was started 20 years ago. A constituent of mine brought to my attention this morning the list she had kept all these years of when they had that years ago.
Mm-hmm.
and she was on and on about.
She called me too, they made them.
Yeah.
I got her too.
Yeah, so, you know, today is today, and we've got to do what's right for today.
One other thing we need to add into this, and Gary, back me up on this, those cards get passed around like playing cards at the dump.
Yeah,
it needs to be a window sticker stuck on the window or stuck on the bumper plate on the window and the back glass like the boat ramp sticker. That sticker needs to be visible. And if somebody don't want a sticker on their vehicle nowhere, they don't need to be coming to the dump site. I mean, that's just what I'm not. We got to get a handle on that because you got people from all these other counties around here that work at this mill. They got their cars, they come straight down there to Carlton Cemetery when they get older.
It needs to be serialized. Just like they used to do the boat ramp stickers. They need to be serialized, just like I used to do the boat ramp stickers.
That's right. And you brought that up a lot of times, and that's something I hope that our workshop doesn't have much more other than solid waste on it for next Thursday, because
it can have a date on it, too.
I'm sorry, I keep saying Thursday. The workshop is Tuesday, y'all, Tuesday. But if you want to bring that up at the workshop and let's try to decide what we want all, because, you know, it's another thing. We've been talking about over and over and over and over.
Right.
And we need to fix it.
I think one of the reasons, comments, is that orders were adopted. We got chewed out by the auditor every year about collecting county grants.
We did.
That's why they changed the position. Mm-hmm. So if it says it in the ordinance, it needs to be amended, you know.
If we haven't amended it already.
Yeah. I don't know what it is.
Well, this has been kind of painful, but I think we've got a good handle on things. You know, we've come a lot further than we did, and I think we know what our job is between now and Tuesday, and then, of course, June on the 8th. But, you know, I feel like we have more direction and we're headed in the right direction. Lisa?
Just a thought on the payment. You talk about going and prepay or picking it up at or getting an invoice or something at the dump site. If people won't pay it with their taxes, do you really think you're going to give them a ticket at the dump site and they're going to pay it? I'm just saying, no, I get what you said, because I'm the one going to go on Saturday with a load of stuff that I didn't have time to get a thing for. But to be sure people pay, my thought is it needs to be prepaid.
Well, nothing is foolproof.
Right.
And, you know, we're trying to start somewhere, and if that doesn't work out, then we need to come back and see how we need to tweak it. But we have to have a starting point.
Right.
And I don't know, from our workshop next Tuesday, that may be what the board is
saying.
I don't know.
Involved.
But it's an option, I'm sure, that we'll be discussing it on Tuesday. But, again, that's not room for error and
right.
Too.
So I'm saying, you can't please everybody. But
so,
or maybe you could have it where, okay, if this dude comes on Saturday and Sunday come, you can get a invoice for that. But for the most part, just have it prepaid.
But what we've done on this picture to take it to our beautiful woods and drop it in the woods.
But they
would
anyway.
We don't want that to happen. Mark?
Not making a finger in it. I've been racking my brain at it mentally. I believe it happened talking about the 2001 ordinance and the few structures that were already there. And I don't remember what year it was. I believe it was probably before any of y'all were on the commission page with it. Because it predates me. I've been here since 2005. But it was when the commission raised the assessment to 140 from where it was before. It was either 124 or 117. And as part of that, they stopped charging for yard debris and everything else.
That was
and it was, you pay 140 to get everything. And that was a decision the commission made at that time. So that's why you have stuff in your ordinance, but you're doing something different.
I see.
That was a decision made over 10 years ago.
When the board knows if you're going to have it to give them a ticket, if you put on that ticket, then if you fail to pay this ticket, you will not be allowed to dump by trailer boats until it's safe. There's got to be some work on there that gets their attention.
Yeah, and you know, that reminds me, there is one restaurant in town that used to, when you went through the drive-through window, there was a mist up there. These people have given us bad checks, and we will not take your check again. I remember you saw everybody that had been through that restaurant, they'd give it a bad check, so maybe you put a sign out there. These people have not paid their, they cannot dump anymore.
You can put it in the newspaper every week before that debate. I don't think it's really real good.
Anyway, and please, commissioners, if you'll look at the information provided by Gary and by Annie Mae, a lot of these, most of them, they pay for their CMD, and their annual fee is more than 140. We're only one more county has 140. I like reading the rest of them, so we need to think about that, because here we are, we don't have a tractor, we need a tractor, we probably don't have another tractor because we don't have the money to buy another tractor. So we got to support ourselves, right, Gary?
Absolutely.
We got to be self-supporting, so we need to really think about that. We're moving on to item, to general business, thank you, Gary, to item 21. The board to consider adoption of a resolution setting the fine for violation of the recreational vehicle or the existing regulations of section 42-6524 east of the code of ordinances as prepared by the county attorney. Is there a motion to read the ordinance by the resolution by title only?
I make a motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
There's a motion by Commissioner Murphy, second by Commissioner Moody. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
With this caveat, if you look at the draft, it's left blank the fines. Y'all got to figure out what those are today if you pass this ordinance. I mean this resolution. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
Okay.
Wait, now we got to figure out the fines today? Okay.
Well, how can you pass a resolution with blank
sentence? Do we have a schedule, LaWanda? Do we have a recommended schedule for doing that?
No, ma'am. I believe that the suggestion at the last time this was discussed, that it be as high as $300. And that was, I don't know that there was really a recommendation. It seems to be a wide range of feelings about how much that violation should be.
Okay, then let's do this. Let's read the resolution by title only. Then we'll have discussion about the fees. Then we'll come back and vote to adopt it.
Okay. All right. It's did y'all vote already for me to read?
We did.
Yes.
Okay. All right. It's a resolution of the Board of County Commissioners of Taylor County, Florida, pursuant to Section 2-126C of the Code of Ordinances, which permits the Board to set a fine amount for violation of the Code, and said resolution setting the fine for violation of the density regulations of Section 42-652-4A of the Code of Ordinances, setting an effective date.
Thank you.
And it's got, what it's got in it, it's got a blank for the first violation, like a, that was suggested by Commissioner Page. In other words, if y'all recall, he suggested a fine for the first violation and then a fine for the second or for the subsequent violations. That's why it's like there's a fine there for the first violation and one for the subsequent violations.
Okay. So, tell me the process. Is it that they get a warning first?
The
one warning, how many? What is the process?
The current process is that if there is a complaint of multiple RVs on a parcel, our code enforcement officer visits that parcel and then does the research to see if that is indeed a violation, and then leaves a letter or mails a letter giving them a set number of days to contact code enforcement. After that, then an additional letter is sent giving them, I believe, as much as 30 days to remove the RV. If they are not in compliance, then we, from what I understand, we schedule a hearing with our hearing officer. And our hearing officer, special magistrate, makes a decision on any punishment as far as moving the RVs. Now, typically people will move their RVs, but the complaints from residents of some of these communities has been that it takes too long for us to persuade people to move RVs that are not in compliance as far as the city ordinance. So the suggestion was that this would empower our code enforcement officer to actually give them to fine them for having, for being out of compliance.
Okay, with the first letter, how long do they have before they get the second letter?
I want to, well, I think it depends on if contact is made. But if I want to, from what I recall, there's usually about 30 days between letters.
So if I get a letter, it says, the first letter says, I've got 30 days?
I can't verify that.
I believe that's what we agreed on. I believe that's what we know, the 30 days.
So, I mean, we may need to look at the whole process, because if the first letter gives you 30, then after that you get another letter and it's another 30 days.
Well, this would change the process completely. So we would no longer issue letters asking them to make contact. This would be, this gives us the ability to cite the person who is not in compliance, just like our boat ramp site.
With no warning, he goes there, he knocks on the door, and he says, what? He says, what?
Here's your citation.
And they get a fine right then for X number of dollars.
Yes.
And this is in coastal areas?
Say again?
This is just in coastal areas?
Our coastal high hazard areas.
Okay.
Right. I don't know about that. I mean, it seems like there should be, not 30 days, but it seems like there should be some period.
Yeah, Scott, please, will be able to report all that blades if you just keep adding 30 days.
Right, right. 30 days.
Well,
that's
why we're doing this. That was my understanding of why the board wanted to pass this resolution, to give us the ability to cite violators of this ordinance without going through a warning process or 30 days or and getting asserted.
That's very, very harsh. You know, we might want to think about it, give a 3-day. Okay, I'm here. If you don't move it in 3 days, I will come back and you will be fined $300 or whatever it is. That gives them 3 days, because it could be. That some people that are not familiar with our, you know, could be innocent with that, couldn't it? So I like to give the benefit of the doubt, but I don't want to give 30, 60 days or no more than about 3 days. Just, I don't know, what do y'all think?
Well, I think a 10-day period would be fair to give them. If you got to mail out a letterhead or something like that, usually it takes 5 days to get there. So I think 10 days, give them a 10-day warning. And after 10 days, they've had ample amount of time to respond. If you haven't responded in 10 days, then we're going to fine you. Just like it's done everywhere else in the country. But you got to give them some sort of leeway. You can't just walk up to
them. I know, I feel that way.
If I'm not mistaken, and Danny can help me clarify this, this resolution doesn't really spell out the process as far as how our code enforcement officer will give these citations. It's more to give us the ability to write citations and to assign a dollar amount. Wouldn't we still have?
Our internal discussions were along the lines of 7 days or so, because a lot of people are only there on the weekends and stuff like that, so they need to be notified.
Right.
When you're just looking at an RV, you don't know who owned it or what their address is. So, you know, we weren't looking at just see it, put a money violation on it, give them 7 days, and then.
Right. I think we should give them 7 or 10 days, whatever,
10 days.
And mail them to their address, if it's in Georgia or wherever. Right. Send them maybe send them a certified letter also leave a notice on their door in such a way that it doesn't blow off. So if they are in Taylor County, that they they don't go back home for more than 10 days.
Yeah, the only one we can send mail to is the property owner, because we don't have any other address.
Well, yeah. So, but I mean, I want to be fair.
Sure,
absolutely.
You know, I want to be fair, but yeah, we need to, you know, move forward. But we've got to have it down so the code enforcement officer, this is the way it's going to be. This is the process.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, I heard you say we don't know who had owned it. You know, when the highway patrolman stopped me, he knows I'm Thomas Denson, he knows I'm married to Louie and all this stuff.
We know who the property owner is, but we don't necessarily know.
It got a tag on it, hasn't it? That tag on that RV.
We don't know
who
the property owner is.
Wouldn't the property owner be
known?
That's right.
Yes.
I agree. Hey, wait a minute now. I'm telling you, when they stop you, they give you a $500 ticket within 2.5 minutes. Am I right, Mr. Sheriff?
How fast were you going to get a $500 ticket?
Well, don't have to be going fast.
We don't have the same ability to search that information as law enforcement does. So what we have to search is the property records to see who the owner of the property is, and that's who our communication is with. And I believe that the assumption is the property owner controls his or her property, and if the property owner is allowing multiple RVs and is not in compliance, then the property owner receives the citation.
Okay, so
they just remember to pay and walk into the tax book shops with that tag number in front of the owner. If it's an out of state tag, that's not true. Because I have to do that same thing with the boat inspection. And I'm connected with the Georgia City of Highway Safety people. I put the list of tag numbers at Georgia numbers. I send them to these girls up there. And then a day or two, I've gotten back. Who the owner is, what the address is.
How long it takes?
How long it takes? A day. So I send an email, and they send it back that day, and they have time for the next day.
A lot of the campers down there don't even have tags on, so we can't go through.
Well, that's if you don't have a tag on it, it's already out of the hole, right?
That's right. But we talked about this last time, about addressing the homeowner. Because if there's no tags on how are we going to find out who it belongs to? But it's the homeowner's responsibility. What if I own the land next to them and a storm comes and they blow all those trailers into my house? And who do I argue with, healthy argument, on who's going to pay for this?
I think if you put that burden on the property owner, the property owner gets the fine because he or she is the man that has rented and allowed them to occupy that space. Right. So it's their responsibility to make sure that their people know our rules. And so I think the fine should go to the property owner. So my suggestion,
that's exactly right. So that's most of the issues I'm hearing, mm-hmm. is people renting lots on their property.
That's
these
right.
people that's got 4 or 5 trailers on there.
If they pull them in here, they don't know, but the property owner knows or will know.
So
I think we should give a 10-day warning, and then after 10-day warning to the property owner,
right.
and after 10 days, and that clearly states that after 10 days, your fine will be what? What?
It needs to be up there.
It needs to be substantial enough to make a difference.
All right, what do you think?
I'm telling you, 10 minutes after I'm pulled, I have a patrolman already got his mind made up.
Okay. I make a suggestion on fine fees. $250
yes.
the first time, $500 a second.
All right.
You hand out one $250 fine, the word's going to get out.
Mr. Bishop.
We're involved in a lawsuit where we set fines and got foreclosure and we got appeal and the fellow's going to sue the county and all of us for $100 million. With regard, in one of his defenses, this was an excessive fine. It was $125 per violation. On each, he had two separate violations. I'm just saying there's a warning there with regard to setting fines with respect to, because there's been a Supreme Court case about excessive fines. I don't think that our $125 was an excessive fine, you know, on that. Fact of the matter is, you know, we when we foreclosed, we limited it, you know, if y'all recall. Now it's set for sale, and he's filed a motion to stay the sale. Whether that will be granted or not, I don't know. So be careful on the amount of what you say. I can give you a suggestion if you want me to. I won't unless you tell me to.
I would, because if you think $250 and $500 is exorbitant, please give us a suggestion.
I don't think it's an exorbitant, but I just think that I'll tell you what happened in Horseshoe Beach. When you had an RV, you were supposed to come and register it at the town clerk's office, and the reason they did that was because they wanted to know how to get in touch with people to remove those if there was a storm coming, okay? And so they set the fine at they set the fee at $50 to register, and then the fine of like $100 or something. Boy, did we have a room full of people ripping and snorting about $50. They were going crazy, so the board repealed it. So whatever you do, you're going to get a backflow on that as a practical matter.
Regardless.
You are. I'm just giving you, you know, experience on that. So now we don't have the list down in Horseshoe. So when the storm's coming up and it blows away an RV into somebody's house, it's going to be, you know what to pay. Because, again, that's another reason why we did this other one, was because of, for the good of the entire community, right? You know, it slows away. So my suggestion, well, I'm not going to suggest, just, no, that's y'all's job.
Well, we're asking you to suggest.
I gave one. We have four more board members.
Okay, 10 days, you said?
10 days.
First fine is what?
I suggest $250, second at $500, but it's merely a suggestion. I need to hear what everybody else has to say.
I want our attorney. I'm asking you to tell us what you think. We'll do what we want to do, but I want to know what you think.
100, 200.
100 and 200.
$100 for the first, second, 200.
Okay. And each subsequent.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So is that for a day? For
violation.
For violation.
Violation.
So the total amount they could be fined is the combination of the first violation and one subsequent?
No, any subsequent. In other words, this is just fine. You know, you're giving them a ticket, and they, you know, they pay the ticket.
So it's $100 the first time, and each one subsequent to that is $200.
They do it again. If the same property owner has more RVs on it than is required by the ordinance, then it would be a $200 fine.
No matter how many is on there. Or per.
I didn't put in per. I just said that's a violation. Now, what you need to do, if you want to get more specific, then you don't need to pass this resolution today, but you need to decide if you want to be more specific.
I just asked a question. I don't know. What's the rest of the question?
I mean, what happens if you give them the 10 days and it remains there for another, because say it's all the same last another week and a half. They stay there during that time. What kind of enforcement are you going to have? That if they don't, is the county going to pick the travel program up and move it somewhere?
That wasn't addressed. It wasn't addressed. What was addressed was the fine, in the hopes that if I got a ticket, I would move it off. In other words, you're trying to be as liberal with the folks as possible with respect to this, because there's a pile of RV down there. You know, There's a pile of RVs everywhere. It's not just Taylor County. You understand what I'm saying? It's all over the state.
Can I speak to that?
Yes.
If we did issue a citation and they refused to remove after that, I don't know why we could not then take them to a hearing officer request a daily fine until the judgment is complied.
Unless the ordinance says, though, a daily fine. It would just be that one...
Well, that's been left up to the discretion of the hearing officer.
I don't know that that's the case. Here's what would happen. For instance, okay, so they didn't pay the fine. Goes in front of the hearing officer where they can contest the fine and say that they don't want to pay the ticket, okay? The hearing officer says you got to pay the ticket or there's a lien. You know, I entered this order, which would be a lien that could be foreclosed. Mm-hmm. Same situation we've got in the other case. You follow me? Here's the scenario. Okay. All right. I've got an RV on there. Too many RVs. I've got one too many RVs on my property, right? Okay. The code enforcement officer comes by and says, Conrad, you've got too many RVs. You need to move it within 10 days. That's what you're going to tell the code enforcement officer. I'm stubborn. I did not move it. So, the code enforcement officer comes back and says, here's your ticket. It's a $100 fine. You can pay the fine at the clerk's office or wherever you're supposed to pay the fine. I'm hard-headed. I'm not going to pay this daggum fine. I want a hearing before the hearing officer. Okay? So we set up a hearing officer, and the hearing officer says, Conrad, you're stubborn. You've got to pay this $100 fine. And if you don't pay the fine, it's going to be a lien because this order is going to be a lien. And it's going to be recorded, and a certified copy of it's going to be recorded. And then when I decide I want to sell that lot, that lien is going to it's going to be there for 20 years. Okay? That's the situation we've got in this case. It's a simplistic thing, but, you know, I'm sitting there and I'm saying, you know, I was a hard-headed rascal and I didn't do that, and now I'm going to have to pay that $100 because I can't sell my property. I'm not going to be able to give these people a clear title to this property who's purchasing this property without having to pay that $100 fine.
Plus interest. Okay.
Plus interest. Plus interest.
And that $100 when interest can be a lot more. But, I was just thinking that if I have a property and I have three RVs on there, and I'm getting $500 each a month. That's $1,500. Give me $100 sign.
And it'll stay
and
right
then,
there.
Because I'm still going to get $1,500, I'll give you $100 of it. And then if you mess with me and another month goes by waiting on a hearing officer and all that, well, I'll collect another $1,500.
Well, that's... You're a good businesswoman, but what's going to happen though, is if you don't move, that's a subsequent violation, and that's where the $200 comes in.
Okay. What are we going to do?
So the county pays additional money. It's only have to pay $100. How much do you pay your code enforcement officer an hour to do all this? Plus, you reduce it to a judgment.
Recording
fees, or the judgment and the certified copy. The board's incurring other expense.
Right. $100. Well, it's
$100
plus these fees.
Then,
well, they don't
say
that.
That's right.
What do you think?
Don't let. We need to drive past this. We need to get a good
order. It probably needs to say plus any costs associated with collection of those fees and fines.
You can redo it.
Okay.
And then let's redo it. And we're going to go with 100 and 200.
That's up to you, man.
I'm just saying. We're going to go with 100 and 200 plus expenses incurred.
Okay.
And 10 days. Is that what we're going with? Fair. That's what we're going with.
You want 10 days between citations? Or you want... And then 10 days.
10 days for that first contact.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then after that,
you're fined.
The second citation Danny, you think another 10 days is adequate for us to keep up with everything we need to? As far as tracking? I'm asking. I mean, is that adequate?
I need to get my $1,500 or something, what she said.
I'm not sure I would respond.
So, operationally, if our code enforcement officer gives an initial notice, gives them 10 days to comply or they get cited.
Right.
My question between the first and the second citation, do we have a time frame of what that needs to be before they get the subsequent citation?
I haven't heard one.
Do you have any suggestions? Would 10 days be adequate, do you think, as far as following up on these cases?
Not
sure.
It makes sense.
Okay. The first one makes sense, or the second?
I mean, if you give 10 days initially, 10 days subsequent, you know, it makes sense.
That's still a lot shorter than the process that we use now.
Right.
As far as notification, you know, scheduling a hearing, and all the follow up that we have to do. So you're compressing this time down to 20 days. And then schedule a hearing.
Do you think that's workable for staff? Is that the best solution, LaWanda? Because you know, what do you think?
Well, I think if we go a whole lot shorter than that, it may be, I'm just worried about the trackability of it. As far as, you know, if we need to give them a second citation 3 days later, have we given adequate time for this process to be worked through for our staff and for the owners.
I don't know. I mean, if they don't pay the fine, I would see if they can do here and all certain
things. But I'm asking the time between the first fine, the first violation, and the second violation. Is what I'm trying to narrow down, what the process should be.
But then after that, I mean, you still could go to a third or fourth and all that. Pretty soon, you've got a whole month behind you. And then maybe another month that they've collected rent, stop, season's over, and that's what's happening.
No, that's not my suggestion.
I'm just giving you a scenario.
Right, no.
Yes.
I need to redo this, and we're going to put in there per day after the person gets the citation.
That's good. That's
per day. Let me just work on it.
Okay.
Why don't y'all table this?
Okay. Yeah,
you've got one thing going, another thing going on with all that. When you got four trailers on one lot, you got four kitchens, and you got four sacks of garbage coming out of that too. Mm-hmm. Right. And, I mean, that's something going to be addressed.
Yes, ma'am. Would you come up to state your name and address at least the first time? We know who you are to this room.
Thank you. 4.6 ratio. This is an issue that's really important to me because in the storm, and for me, we lost the house, but the house was slowly before that. It was so destroyed. About all properties were severely damaged. They moved in trailers. It was horrifying because they devalued our property and everything. And then it takes what I agree with you, ma'am. What they're going to do is that we want to have just a moss. And these gentlemen, I mean, everyone over here was so helpful. I mean, a little more than everyone was very, very helpful. However, it took forever. You are right. What they will do is play the time. And if you don't charge enough that first time and really get on it, if they're going to just, they're making so much money. I've had people who rented their home in Steenatchee and put a horse trailer next to us, and they were staying at the other end of it while people rented their home for a whole lot of money. I mean, I can't tell you how bad it is. Here we are. We just spent a lot of money. Thank God we have insurance. You know, our house was devastated. We lifted it up. I'm walking out of my porch and suddenly I'm looking down to a horse trailer. I'm just telling you, there need to be some rules about, you know, taking neighborhoods and letting these, if people, Gulf County has real good ordinances, you can look at some of those, but you have a lot to charge for not money. It's just like the traffic ticket. If you get a traffic ticket and it's $200, you really slow down. I'm just telling you, you have got to charge enough initially and have time span short enough so that they get out of there. Otherwise, if they've got two trailers on there and they're getting, whatever they're getting is a lot of money for the rent, it's not going to be worth it to them. They'll pay a little fine and it's leave there. They'll feel lean on their property or something real. Mm-hmm. Thank you for addressing this. We're going to lose our coastal property and the value of it. We're losing the values of our homes. And we're losing it with the storms and we're losing it with the properties next to us being just, you know, just, they're using it for whatever they want to do. And just remember this, whenever you have a trailer come in and you have an RV, that RV is allowed to have a golf cart, right? Okay, there's nothing to address the boat trailers. The three RVs that were next to us for the longest time, and finally you all did something, thank goodness. I thank Danny Brunner, I thank all the people who worked on that. Okay, each one can have all the boats they want, right? All the boat trailers lined up against, right up against, on top of our property line. And then you can have the cars, you got the truck, well, you got to have another vehicle to drive, maybe else that. It's a nightmare. It is a nightmare. You need to address those vehicles. They can bring it. How many vehicles can each RV have? I mean, it's wall to wall. And you're looking down at what looks like a used boat lot. Thank you for caring.
Thank you. So, Comrade, I like your idea of a day-to-day. That will fix some of this. So, at our next meeting, then, or whenever you get it ready, we'll look at it then. County Administrator, items number 22. The County Administrator to discuss informational items.
Just as a reminder, we are now in hurricane season, and Emergency Management is sponsoring a hurricane preparedness luncheon. It's on June 24th, which is next Monday at 11 o'clock in the morning. We have put out a public notice for this, but if you have not RSVP'd to Christy Anderson, she is asking that we do so she can get an accurate head count.
Who's going to be here?
It's an emergency management at the EOC. Okay. And I'd also like to read to you a thank you card that we received from Brother Dave Krell, who is the pastor at First Baptist Church in Madison. To the Taylor County Board of Commissioners, thank you so much for waiving the boat ramp access fees for our annual Take a Kid Fishing Day. This ministry to the children at the Methodist Youth Ranch in Madison County enriches all of our lives in Christ. You have an important hand in that blessing. Thank you.
Nice. Very nice.
And as you know, last week, some of us attended the Florida Association of Counties annual conference. I would like to take the opportunity to thank the board for giving me this opportunity to attend and bring back information to our county. There was a Restore Act meeting during that session. I was not able to attend because I was attending a different workshop, but when those minutes are available, I will pass those along to the board.
Could you bring us back some ink pens? Will you know?
I did not.
Oh, man.
I'm sorry.
And I was at the Restore Act meeting, and it was about like the rest of them. It was just water under the bridge. Yeah. But they're getting there. It's just a long process. It's getting there.
Well, we'd like an update when you know, get all the minutes and just see where we are. I'm sure citizens are interested in kind of knowing where everything is. Thank you. Item 23, comments and concerns from the public for non-agenda items. If you wish to speak on something that was not on the agenda, you can come forward, state your name and address, and you have 3 minutes. Yes?
can tell, if you're trying to think, those on the board who are listening to the DOT and willing to help us to get our bridge repaired so that our lives are safe out there. We addressed those concerns earlier, and the good thing is the DOT came and made it completely, absolutely clear. They made it absolutely clear, Mrs. Morgan and Dr. Hammond, the engineer, that they are willing to help make the bridge drivable. They cannot help turning into a pedestrian bridge. They know the people who, if he isn't interested, they are willing to do this in a way that it would, there's a way to do it so that it's reasonable. There are people that DOT knows, they have told us about, we have spoken with, who can do this very reasonably, and they work all the time for DOT and their contractors. And other people can address that. The main thing is over 100 people have either written letters like these, or they have called, or emailed, or testified, saying that we want the bridge fixed for safety out there. And they address all kinds of problems. The one family that lives right at the end of the bridge, and they came over and talked to Commissioner Murphy whenever he was there looking at the bridge. And her husband came and testified and gave very moving testimony. And just shortly after that, and you've got the bridge repaired, and just shortly after that, I was going to thank him, and I talked to someone on the road, and they said, oh, he was just killed in an accident. He was a dentist. He was going over to volunteer to help in Cabello. Anyway, somehow he was killed in a car accident. That family, I know it was hard for them. They didn't come up here in person, but they wrote two letters. And a warm woman came out, and the children, with the little children, and they talked to Sean. He was there beneath the bridge. And she mentioned that she has grandchildren, a 4-year-old, 1-year-old, who are in danger there. And what's happened? They're right at the end of the bridge. People come and they turn right around. And right there, there's no room to turn around except you turn around on private property. And people are having, just like we did, put a rope up. So you can't turn around my driveway. There's no turnaround at all there. This is not acceptable. And it is not safe when you've got little children playing. They talk about the bridge and essential safety escape route in case there's an obstruction blocking the bridge. This left person says, having a secondary way out could be life-saving should we need emergency care if the main way is impassable due to a storm. And this other lady says, we need an escape route in case there's destruction blocking the property. And one person said, whenever the water main broke, and you couldn't use that, I'm just telling you that what we need to do is continue. We thank the newspaper for doing a beautiful job of covering this issue on both sides. And it does require a lot of thought. But DOT is willing and ready to help. They emphasize how long it's going to take to get this repaired. Whatever 5 years, it will be maybe 10. And we can go, this is storm season. Right now, lives are at risk. You guys just do your job, and you're there for the people being at you too. Because it's important. Lives save count.
Thank you.
Thank you for your help.
Thank you.
Deeply appreciated.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm John Vickers, 426 Granger Drive. I'd also like to thank the Fair News Hero. They did a good story this past Friday, and I think it was fair on all sides. As Dale said, we contacted the DOT in Lake City, and they have suggested a contractor to me that the DOT uses all over the state of Florida. They have the equipment to do the job necessary. And I talked to the man over the phone, and he said if you'll
writing an email and send the information and send some pictures, which I sent him 12 pictures. And after he'd received it and everything, he said, I can't give you a quote unless I look at the bridge itself. And he said, and I said, well, and he said, also, we need that, the report which the DOT gave the county when they condemned the bridge and said they can't use it anymore. So if you want to get any quotes on the bridge, they need that report or a copy of it. I said, well, you can't tell me a firm quote. In fact, I'm not the county. I'm just an individual that lives down there and has an interest in it. He says, I said, can you give me a wild guess about what it takes? He said, less than $50,000. Less than $50,000. So I hope that the county will consider them as a possible contractor. They can do the job. So if you can get it on the agenda, somebody, and I'd be glad to help the county in any way that I can. And so I thank you so much. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Could we get a copy of that gentleman's address and all?
Yeah, I got it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Beautiful lady.
Oh, okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes,
sir.
My name is Marlene Seamus, and I live at 18143 West Whitetail Drive.
Do you know anybody up here?
No.
Okay.
Marlene Seamus, S-E-M-A-S. Yes, I do. My complaint is, it's the same song, just a different verse. We need a police substation out our way. It is imperative. At night, I don't sleep because at 3 o'clock in the morning, I have people up and down the road on little motor scooters, on ATVs, they stop in my driveway. And as a matter of fact, they came onto my property now and have taken the SIM card out of my cameras that are on my property, and they have come in and stolen those. Somebody has. And cigarette butts are left there. I know we don't smoke. And hardly anybody uses that driveway. They use my other driveway. I just feel that I'm happy that Stan actually got a substation. I am very happy for them. But for us to have to almost cry and beg for somebody to come out and, you know, just be out there and show their presence. I raised my family in Carroll City in Miami area. And if anybody knows Carroll City, they know it is not a great place. I felt safer there because I could call the police and I have a 2-3 car in my front yard in 3 minutes. And I just think if we can get somebody out there, it would just, you know, we've got the fire station open now, and I don't know why there isn't a little room. If they get a prisoner, why they can't shackle them to the floor till somebody can come and transport them. You know, it's just, to me, it would just be a real, real help to have the police action up some more. And I thank you for your time.
Okay. Thank you. You talked to the sheriff?
Yes, and several of the officers.
All right. Thank you, ma'am.
Keaton Beach.
Huh?
Keaton Beach.
Anybody else? Yes.
Hey, y'all. I'll do an second name again. I'm like, everybody here knows.
You got an address?
Okay. I have come to ask for permission to shoot fireworks from Hodges Park for the 4th of July. It'll actually be Saturday the 6th that we want to do it.
Okay, there's a process that you have to go through, right, Lauren?
Our ordinance states, no person shall ever have in their possession or set off or otherwise cause to explode, discharge, or burn any firecrackers, torpedoes, rockets, or other fireworks or explosives in or from recreational property unless authorized to do so by the Board of County Commissioners of the county
and have written authority to proceed from the county administrator, and then only after obtaining any permits required by the county, which would be through our fire chief. So the board gives permission from what I'm reading, and then after the permits are obtained and approved, then the county administrator can give written authority.
I have two questions. Are you fine with this, Dan? As long as they meet all your requirements?
They've shot off a number of times before. They go through the whole application process. So that they'll be good to go. Like I said, but before we can give them the application, because it's on county property, they've got to have permission before we can go ahead and give them.
Now, the second question I have is, do you have liability insurance?
Yes, sir.
That is part of the application process.
I have had a
That's all I need to hear.
And we would have to give permission for Hodges Park to stay open after dark, depending on the time.
Well, it'll be at dark, yes ma'am, probably about 9.
Yeah.
That's
the deal. It's July 4th, a one time a year event. I personally don't have a problem with it if you go through the process. I'm one commissioner out of 5.
I agree with it. I think it'd be a great thing. It's been wet recently, so we've got...
Well, and I always, Mr. Castle, we go through that process and he'll come inspect for us. It's just like we did one at Waterbees back here Memorial, and he came down there and checked us, and then it had been very dry. But with humidity and stuff coming up at night, he approved it. We didn't have a problem. Everything went off without a hitch.
Okay, let me just ask you one question. When you do that, say for instance, if you did it at the Hodges Park, would any ashes or anything like that come down on boats and houses there? Like, I know up and down the road, people do it off of their docks, and I've had complaints with people that have had their boat seats burned and things like
from
that.
From where we're talking about is, like, you go down, you know, the parking area on the end at Hodges Park, over there, back away from the light pole, as far back as we can get. Mr. Capital's been there and watched this. Most everything burns out before it ever hits the ground. And with us being that far back away from anybody, I really don't see it as being a problem.
Dan.
Part of their application process, they have to give a site plan, which shows this is the blast fall radius, this is the viewing area. So when I'm approving that, I'm looking to make sure that they can't burn any neighboring property or anything like that where, you know, they're well within the safety margin. The only other thing I would recommend that you ask is, by giving them permission, would be to say that they police up the area afterwards if there's any unspent casing here.
Yeah, we are. We'll haul the trailers from there. Probably
and you
that night.
So that people don't
get
caught.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, they'll have a safety area where.
Yeah, we'll have caution tape up.
And
so you're going to take the parking area. You would.
The bar and parking area.
So people then would just, you know, that one event park up and down the road.
And we would ask that they pick up all the debris.
Yes, ma'am, we do. We always do.
So citizens who live in that area don't feel like they should have to clean up behind an event like this.
Well, we've learned, just to let y'all know, all these tapes and stuff come with paper, talks, we cut all that off. We don't have that going up and going out, because I won't clean it up, tell you the truth, because I'm a cleaner. And so we don't have a lot of mess. Most everything is just the boxes and stuff on the trailers.
Okay, here's the situation. We don't have our next board meeting until July the 8th. Next Tuesday, we have a workshop, but we're talking about having a special meeting at that time so we can vote, so if we don't vote at a workshop. So if this is something that you want to do, you need to get it all in order and have it ready.
What do I need from you then?
Tuesday.
Well,
get it there after the meeting.
Permit, yeah.
Okay, so I've got all that to him already. He just needed to prove it after y'all approved. So you're saying it's okay with the permit, and then y'all have to vote on it?
We have to vote on it at a meeting, not a workshop.
Okay. Y'all can't vote today?
No. You don't have everything ready anyway.
Pretty much I do.
Yeah,
but
it's
not on paper.
The application and permits to display. It doesn't say that they have permission to use the facilities or the land. So I can give her a permit saying that all her paperwork is in order, and then the board can come back and say, okay, your paperwork is in order. We're allowing you to use it.
Okay.
And what I need to do with you, ma'am?
I think we're set. I'll work with Dan.
Okay, you'll just get that in her form, and then y'all let me know next week. Okay.
What day this will be? July 6th or July 4th?
The 6th. That's Saturday, 6th. Yes, sir.
That's after the 4th.
Okay. Alright.
So it will be after your next board meeting. If you wait until next board meeting, so it's got to be going up.
We'll have to do it for the 20th. Just make sure you got everything ready by Tuesday.
Okay, as far as I know, they got that covered for me.
Okay. Anybody else?
Thank you.
Okay, if not, we're going to go to item 24, board informational items. Commissioner Murphy? Commissioner Dix?
Yes, ma'am. I've got a call from a fellow that we had a hearing up there in Judge Drew's office. He said he's sued each commissioner for $100 million.
I've got it, sir.
He said he's pretty sure he's going to win it because some special gizmo I would correct he got. I want you to know that he's suing for $100 million. He said he can do 5 commissioners, the judge, and the attorney.
And the county minister.
And you.
Who?
What's his name?
Mr. Brooks. You were there.
Yeah, I know it, but you know, the name, I get many names.
Yeah, name's Brooks.
Okay.
Been going on for years. Okay. It was on my list to tell you that he was going to sue everybody for $100 million.
Okay.
You want to go ahead and talk about it?
Well, what's happened is that the judge entered a foreclosure order and also set a sale date for this property. It's the one where he did not fix the house and also left boats there, abandoned boats. There was a hearing before Judge Blue. When he was a hearing officer, he entered an order. Guy never paid it. And then I was instructed by the board to foreclose that. We've done that. He's sued us back in that. He sued me and the county administrator in Michigan. That was dismissed. He appealed the first. We got a summary judgment on his claims. He appealed that, and that was dismissed because it was premature. The foreclosure sale is set for July the 2nd. He's filed a motion to stay that sale. Like I said, I don't know whether that's going to be stayed or not. Our position is that we've done everything that we were supposed to do. He files numerous documents. He says that I'm just the devil for sure. And all kinds of things you can look at that's been filed. If it's stayed, he's done his appeal. I will tell you that in mine and Mr. Smith's feeling is that he hasn't done his appeal properly. So you never know what the First District Court of Appeal is going to do. And we will defend ourselves to the utmost. I'll let you know that. And if he sues us for $100 million, of course, we'll notify our carrier. That's the name of that team.
Are there any countersuit measures implemented?
Well, that's what he's countersuing us for. Like I said, the foreclosure on that is we gave a break because there was the fines went way past what we foreclosed for. I don't have $100 million.
Neither do I. How about y'all?
Commissioner Dent, do you have anything else?
Well, the other thing I was going to bring up.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
About the aquatic center. they're popping up. There are three in Tallahassee, there's one in Ocala that I was looking at. And when the person brought this to me, they were saying that, and I told them I thought the reason the city might have closed the swimming pool was because of liability. They said, well, you're going down to the beach and you know, there's spinning water down there. You don't call up liability insurance. That didn't fly. So they said they were going to talk to the city and see if they can come up with a co-join with the city to try to do something like that. So I told them, okay, we'll look at it. They'll bring it back to a budget workshop. So. Okay, that's it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Neal? I don't know if y'all been down there for training or not, but they're working on getting everything done there to get a camp, somebody to come in there. And I've had one lady call me, she's real interested. As soon as we get ready to have somebody down there, she's ready to move down there. Really? So that's going to be, we'll get that thing behind us. But she's well wanting to mow and weed eat and lock the gate and unlock the gate, whatever it takes to give her a place to put her camp.
How long do you want to look before it's ready for this lady?
Probably, I think the last estimate I was given was it could be as much as a couple of months because of some issues we're having with the placement of the utilities. We have underground utilities there presently, but staff does not feel like it's adequate to support what's needed for an RV. So we're trying to work through that, all of that now, as far as how the utilities will be placed.
But it's ongoing, working on it. It's
okay.
Well, I'll tell her if she calls me again. I haven't got any other issues.
Okay, amen. Anybody else? Yes.
One more. The attorney for the board with regard to Mr. Lakey's claim thinks that he can settle that without having to go to mediation. I told him I would let y'all know, and if y'all's okay, I'll tell him to negotiate with him and see what their offer is. And of course, no offer would be accept it until y'all approve it, if you understand what I'm saying. So.
I got plenty to say, but I'm not going to say anything.
That's a good idea.
No, I'm not. I want to thank the public for coming. I want to thank the staff for a job well done. All of you. Thank the newspaper, and I appreciate the board. Us being able to work together. And it's my honor and privilege to serve with this board. Is there a motion to adjourn?
I move. Second.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Have a good day.
I know it.